Welcome to peoplesinternetradio.com. Vin here, folks. Apparently it's, would have been an idea to check before. January the 18th, seemingly 2015, 9:05. That's for the podcast audience. And, yep, here we are, Sunday night again. But this Sunday is a special Sunday. Fantastic meetup today. It really was brilliant. Good set of honest, decent, hard-working people, of course, show up. And we talk and we discuss. And, of course, all with the idea of seeking solutions firmly fixed in mind. And I was listening to the OIM guys before I come on there. And it was great to hear Finbar and the way he was talking about, you know, groups need to join hands and link together. Of course, we have been doing that. And in fairness, a lot of the groups have a lot of guys that kind of crisscross, if you will, between different groups. But yeah, absolutely, we're absolutely more than happy to do the same thing, to link up with other groups, come on board, guys, grab a slot, talk about what it is you need to talk about. You can have your own slot here on peoplesinternetradio.com. No problem. The way we see it, as long as you're seeking solutions, we're happy. You know, that's what we're about, seeking solutions. We feel generally we have found many solutions, but that doesn't mean we found them all. Maybe you know more. We're willing to listen to you. We're willing to give you a slot on air. You come on, say what it is you need to say. Doesn't cost you any. We run by the donation button, and we will have to do that until we discover a way of operating without that. Somebody says there's an echo. It's possible you may have two players on. Anybody else getting an echo? If so, let me know. There you go. Not for you, Cuddy, in the chat box. You must have another player on somewhere. We've had that before, and generally that's what it turns out to be. Somebody else has a second player in the background. Billy Maguire is my guest for tonight, folks. I'm just going to go and get him shortly. Another few minutes. But there you go. Sorted. It was another player, right? Couple of things, though, just before we get to that. Of course, we all know, 21st of January, noon, the Mansion House, Dublin, the turning of the Sovereign Seal will be happening. And it may not happen inside the Mansion House because apparently the Lord Mayor of Dublin has said no, quite frankly. He's not willing to open up the Mansion House and to facilitate. But you know what? It doesn't really matter. It's not nice, perhaps. And, you know, a lot of people might have mixed views on that. But essentially what's important is that we, the people, accept and acknowledge our sovereignty. Not necessarily only on the 24th of January. Every day, every waking moment. You see, you are always, as long as you're living, I suppose, perpetually sovereign. That is your actual living condition. That is what life is. Life is sovereignty. But just as you can live your life and not realize you're sovereign, if that is the case, you see, others out there will attempt to take advantage of that. And they try to use that against you. And how they use it against you is they try to convince you that somehow you owe an obligation or an allegiance or something to them or to some body they control. That's really what this is all about, folks. Control. Either you are going to let another control you, or you are not. That is really how simple this is. I mean, I put up a post on Facebook there. I'm going to read through it because it was a bit of a rant, but at the same time, I meant it. I mean this. So I began the post, time to grow up, people. You are not sovereign. The crown told you so, remember? Listen to the people telling you that is the case. Be the slaves that you were told you are by the government. They're not operating under the crown, honest. They only have your best interests at heart. Can't you see that? Ireland, when an Independence Day, yeah, right, that can't be, can it? I mean, the Irish people know there was a failed revolution under the crown. Did we somehow make the crown realize that the Irish people are not their property after all? Only an idiot would think that all people are sovereign. Listen to those telling you you're not sovereign. Listen to them telling you, let your sovereignty go. The men and women that were killed and executed would not have bothered to condense all their information in an ancient symbol that when evaluated in the future would explain it all to you. Are you kidding me? The Irish people back then were not that clever or sophisticated. They had no clue about anything. They wouldn't have been able to do such a thing. They were too busy ignoring the control system that the oppressors of the people of Ireland, known as the Crown and their agents, had used for over 800 years. The silly Irish learned nothing of these methods. And if they did, then surely they were messing with forces that only the Crown had a right to. I mean, it's not like the Crown had misused this methodology to inflict slavery on most of the world, right? Yeah, those dumb Irish wouldn't have figured out that to slip into those secret societies and to learn their secrets and then to share them openly with the Irish people so that they could no longer be controlled by the Crown. Well, that's clearly just madness. The IRB, the Irish Republican Brotherhood, infiltrated those secret societies. That's not a secret. They were told and discovered their methods of mass population control. And then they did something that, as far as I can tell, no member of any other secret society ever did. Ever. They then spread and shared that information to all. The methodologies were shared to all. They already had ideas about how they felt the people of this land we call Ireland should be free and sovereign. They themselves, of course, were not a secret society, but they were a secret organisation. Any half-witted moron could figure that one out. Because if you had, at the time, been discovered, you would have been killed by the Crown agents. Actually killed because you wanted the people of this land to be free and sovereign. That used to be good enough to have you executed. So what is Billy Maguire's message? What's it all about? I'm going to bring Billy now and bring him on and let him tell you. But I would say this. You are sovereign. You are unique. You are special. No one is your master. No one. Not Billy Maguire. Not me. Not your mother. Not your father. Not your husband. Not your wife. Not your brother. Not your sister. Not one politician. You are the master of you. It's time you accept that. You must accept it. If you do not accept that, you have no right, for want of a better word, in complaining to me about it. If you won't free yourself, who are you to complain to me about it? If I'm freeing myself, how can that cause an injury to you? Maybe you think it can. I don't know. I don't see how. But we need the young people to realize this. We need the old people to realize this. We need the middle-aged people to realize this. We need to teach our young. Okay, I'm going to go get my guest now, and back just after this. So, you're live on the radio now, Billy.
Well, good evening, Vincent, and good evening to your listeners.
Okay, I'm just checking some levels there. Let me know if you can hear Billy okay, folks. Okay. All seems good now, Billy.
Right.
So, where do we start?
Next Wednesday, please.
Okay, let's take it from the top, as they say. So, 21st
of January,
at noon.
96.
The 96th turning of the Sovereign Seal of the Sovereign Republic of Ireland.
That's it.
And unfortunately, it seems again, the Lord Mayor's office has been uncooperative.
That's right. We're not allowed in. I don't know where Christy Burke or the Lord Mayor's office thinks that the state was ratified by the will of all the people. They must have some secret venue because they won't tell us. And I think it really is at this stage, it's gone beyond a joke. I mean, you have to be factually correct. And in the face of the world, I mean, we don't celebrate our independence if we don't celebrate our sovereignty. And I think it's a very serious situation. And it's just getting worse. All these people are just sort of think they can do what they like, and they are doing what they like. And using our tricolour flag over the mansion house, you know, that's not on.
Well, it begs the question, what do they think is going on? I mean, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Lord Mayor of Dublin puts himself out there as a staunch Republican, doesn't he?
He does. And as you know, we had the same problem last year. Sorry, Vincent.
You're
fine. But last year, we had it was Oisin Quinn he was a member of the Bar Council, and he couldn't read the Proclamation of the Sovereign Constitution, and he tried to pretend that we were rude to the staff in Dublin City Council, and I wrote a letter, which you probably have up on your website anyway, and that was not true. We were never rude to anybody, and we're denied. Of course, the whole fact is that the problem is licences, and I would like to know where Christy Burke is getting his licence from, and I'd like him to show his licence. And as you know, we claim the first four strings, earth, air, fire, and water, and that's what it's all about. Where is the license for the water? Where are the license? Where is Burke getting his license from? Where is he getting his sovereign from? I think it's time that they were asked, and Dublin City Council must be asked to produce the license that they have. And I think, You know, the Guard Pro concert, they said they issued three licenses. And as you know, we asked to show the license and they couldn't show the license. And then they said, oh no, it's a three permits. So I said, all right, show the permits. They couldn't show the permits. And then they said it was penny permission. You know, that has to be sorted out. You can't leave that go festering on. And you can't leave go on that. You can't sell something that you don't have a license for. And all this whole nod and a wink is out. And you know, that's what it was about. All licenses are only valid from the 21st of January to the 20th of January each and every year when they return back to the sovereign citizens and the sovereign government of the Sovereign Republic of Eire. And the name of the state is the Sovereign Republic of Eire. And as you know, I read that piece for you on De Valera's 37 constitution. We have five constitutions in the state. The first one is the Sovereign Republic of Eire. And that was by the will of all the people and ratified. That's the 1918-32 county election and ratified by the will of all the people. Excuse me. And the next one then was the King George V imposed the Free State Constitution in the Shelburne Hotel, and he usurped the sovereignty of the citizens and the sovereignty of the Sovereign Republic of Eire for himself. And we had become subjects to the crown. And that was imposed as a British apartheid system for the 26 and 6 counties of Ireland as an Orange Free State and a provisional government. That's what we have today. And then you have De Valera's 37 constitution. And he rejigged the sovereign constitution. He wasn't allowed by the Crown of England. It's only a 26 county vote. To be a member of Dáil Éireann or the Sovereign Republic of Eire, it's a 32 county mandate. That's what was in 1918. And De Valera, in his 37 constitution, and I'll read it out to you, it says the state, Article 4, the name of the state is Eire, or in the English language, Ireland. That is not correct. The great republican that De Valera claimed to be, he left out republic. He should have written down, the name of the state is the Sovereign Republic of Eire. That's the name of the state. That's what all those volunteers carried and Citizens' Army. That's what they carried, Eight Strings IV, Irish Volunteers, Ogden O'Hearn, on their uniforms. Article 5, Ireland is a sovereign, independent, democratic state. That is not correct. Ireland is a sovereign, republic, independent, democratic state. And I listened to Vincent Brown the other day in his program, and he had a Fianna Fáil person on that, and he said they were the only Republican party in the state.
What? They said what?
The only Republican party in the state. They're not a Republican party at all.
And which state are they referring to?
That's what I don't know. maybe you might enlighten me.
Well, I must have missed another meeting.
and I mean, the whole point of the whole issue is our sovereignty and the state. And I'm very upset about going out and selling everything they have this license when they don't even have a license to trade. You know, it's going to continue until this, the people are sovereign. And that's what's important. And, anyway, that's what happened. You want to ask me a few questions, Vincent?
I do. I mean, there's a couple of things I think that, I think up to now, Billy, generally when you've been on the radio with me, you know.
You don't get a word in.
I wasn't going to say that.
We're taking it, though, Vincent.
No, but, I think a lot of people read it. But when we talk during the day, I mean, you'd ring me regularly, and we talk regularly on the phone,
yeah.
And we generally have a very nice to and fro.
Yes.
And I think I kind of like the idea that maybe if we try to pretend, if you will, that there's nobody listening to us, that it's just myself and yourself talking here.
Probably not.
The way we normally do. Yeah. Because I've been trying to make people realize, you see, that the significance of what, not just what you're saying, Billy, but the significance of the message that's coming through time. You see, I see this as a message through time from, you know, those who came before us. It's like the past is whispering to you, why aren't you free yet? You know, why aren't you choosing freedom, really, is the key question. Why are the people not choosing freedom? And of course, the reason they're not choosing it is because they don't know they haven't got it. They can kind of feel it deep down, but they don't exactly know. Yeah, you know, people know. Yeah, I know I'm not fully free for some reason, but I don't know why. And the point I was making generally is that the reason people don't know is because, quite frankly, the structure of the system that was put in place and maintained by the Crown and its agents, not just in Ireland but across the whole British Empire, was specifically designed and carefully crafted over all those years to make, you know, to make damn sure the people would never discover exactly how they were being enslaved.
Well, that's what it is, slavery. If you haven't got your sovereignty, you're a slave. And that's what I keep on emphasizing. You know, every child here is born sovereign, and he has a sovereign right to all the assets of the state, earth, air, fire, and water, which a man's intellect and reason and his five senses. And we have then the sovereign Trinity. And then that is the old Celtic Christianity. It predates Roman Christianity. And
yeah, I mean, I love the term you use. You'd say the Christian ethos.
Well, that's what it
is. It's an ethical stance.
That's what it is.
Which is, of course, so simple. That's do unto others, right? It's pretty much.
And I always say sovereigns don't behave like that. And that's why, you know, and I want a truth commission to come out starting in 1912 when the Ulster Volunteers were founded and the Covenant was founded. And Sir Edward Carson then. And then in 1913. And we're waiting over 100 years for this truth commission to come out. It hasn't come out yet. I don't know what they're waiting for. But in 1913, as you know, the UVF became, the Ulster Volunteers became the UVF Army. And I mean, the whole point of the Covenant of 1912, the Ulster Volunteer Covenant, you never take the harp. The harp is the sovereign. And the crown is not the sovereign. It is the harp. The crown is royalty.
See, I think that confuses people when you say that, Billy. So what generally the way I try to explain it to people is the following. I say, look, because people are getting confused, they think, you know, that it's a physical thing. And I would say, no, it's not a physical thing. It can be carved into a physical shape, as it were, and you can make a physical harp, of course, but it's the knowledge and that's been used to construct it. That's really what it's all about. That without that knowledge, literally, we will perish.
And it's about your being, Vincent. That's
yes.
What it's all about. You and all your five senses. I just mentioned it there. You know,
yeah.
And how you live your life, and you know how you live your life on this earth.
Yeah. Well, you see, with the message, I mean, I'm trying to get across here to people that look, it's not about a thing. This is not about a thing. This is about life. This is about people.
That's it.
Sovereignty is about your family and your friends and how we interact. That's what it's all about.
I mean,
and if we are slaves, somebody else is controlling or taking a little piece of the pie of all our interactions.
That's it.
Yeah. And that's, how can any man justify that, Billy?
Well, the point I'm trying to bring out to people is that, and I think, you know, that we talk about the peace, reconciliation and prosperity process that was founded in 1950 by the Irish Republican Brotherhood. And, you know, it's all about education and all about, the Irish Republican Brotherhood, as we know, they were founded in 1858 and at 16 Lombard Street on St. Patrick's Day, and that's the reason why we celebrate St. Patrick's Day. The tricolour flag, that's theirs, they put up in the Mansion House. That's our tricolour flag, and that's the tricolour flag that flew on the GPO in 1916 and taken down by Dermot Lynch and kept in Vaughan's Hotel until it was ratified by the will of all the people of the 32 counties, together with the sovereign seals and harps and Easter Lily and the Shamrock, and the Sovereign Constitution and the Proclamation. They're the foundation documents of the state. And sovereign and indefeasible, nobody can change those, you know. And I think it's time that we stood up. And I want that group commission to start, as I said, in 1912. And as you know, in 1913, the Irish Republican Brotherhood intelligence officers reported to the Supreme Council of the Irish Republican Brotherhood that the Ulster Volunteers had changed to the Ulster Volunteer Army, and that Guinness's Lord Rothschild and Rupert Kipling had given £250,000 to buy the top-class German guns to arm the UVF army. And as a consequence of that, the Supreme Council of the Irish Republican Brotherhood founded the Irish Volunteers and the Irish Citizens Army as a defence force to protect our people and our state.
And that's vital, Billy. That
is crucial.
So many people miss out those words, defence force.
That's exactly it. That's
they're
what we
only
are.
Supposed to defend an actual attack.
That's it, and that's
nothing else. In fact, they don't have. Basically, the people aren't giving them the authority to do anything else.
That's it. That's it. And you see, then you move on to 1914, and in 1913, the Supreme Council of the Irish Republican Brotherhood were looking for volunteers to collect intelligence on the Crown forces and on the UVF army. And two of those was my granduncle Tom McGuire and Sam Maguire, who was secretary of the Irish Republican Brotherhood. They volunteered. Sam was sent to the post office in London and got himself into the position where all the intelligence from all around the world was going through his office. And my granduncle was sent to Calcutta in India and to collect all that intelligence, which every Saturday, Sam brought that intelligence to Vaughan's Hotel, 29 Parnell Square in Granby Road. And it was owned by Mrs. Vaughan at that stage. And they only had a room from Mrs. Vaughan at that stage. It wasn't headquarters. And then in 1914, that was all 1914, and the UVF army declared war on Britain and Ireland if home rule was imposed by King George. And British government and King George, they capitulated to the UVF army. And that's very important to know what happened. And they, because they saw that if the UVF army attacked Britain, which they had every intention to do, they declared it, and that Germany would have wiped out Britain. And that's the reason why they capitulated to the UVF army. And I think they've been doing it. And what about the rest of us? What about, we were treated with absolute contempt. You know, 1916 would never have happened. Because we have no, the Irish Republican Brotherhood are only the umbrella group for, you know, at that stage the political wing was Sinn Féin, and Óglan na hÉireann is the military wing, the Irish Volunteers and Citizens Army, and Cumann na mBan na Fianna Fáil na hÉireann, all those organisations. We're only the umbrella group, and we're not a political party as such. We hold the mandate of the 32 county election of 1918. And we hold the sovereignty and the legitimacy of the state, the sovereign republic of Erin. And as you know, we can go on a little bit then to 1915 when they could collect in 1913 £1,500 for buy weapons to defend the state and our citizens. And sure, there were only old antique things. I mean, I know a lot of them because they were in Willowbank, a lot of those old guns things. They were rubbish, really. You know, they were too old things that came in from all over the world. But you wouldn't even like to fire one of them, you know. But anyway, in 1917, then, for the revitalization of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, my family, we bought Vaughan's Hotel, 29 Parnell Square in Granby Row from Mrs. Vaughan as the headquarters of the Irish Republican Brotherhood. And Óglan na hÉireann, and you know, Cumann na mBan na Fianna Fáil na hÉireann, and all those organisations as their headquarters. And we donated £1 million sterling to the Irish Republican Brotherhood to set up the 32 county election of 1918, and to set up Dáil Éireann, and to set up the Sovereign Republican Dáil Éireann Courts and the Wall of Independence as a defence force. And also has to be said that James Maguire, who was chairman of Friends of Irish People in America, they collected all that money in America for the Irish Republican Brotherhood. And if on the 21st of January 1919, which we're commemorating next Wednesday, all the institutions of the state were up and working on that date. Michael Collins was Minister of Finance, just to give us a quotation. And all the institutions were there. And that's a fair, these are the facts. And that money that was collected in America was to set up hospital care, schools, electricity, all what you see, all the institutions of the state. And, of course, that money was misappropriated by the politicians. That money is our money, Irish Republican Brotherhood money. And if we had that money back today, we could buy Vaughan's Hotel, which I've been trying to get the Dublin City Council, the provincial government and everybody else to do, where the state was founded. And to buy Moore Street, we would have had plenty of money to, and we would still have plenty of money to set up the water and all the other, institutions of the state, which are, the people are sovereign. And if you notice that in 1922, when King George V imposed the British apartheid system for the 26 and 6 counties of Ireland as an Orange Free State and a provisional government, Michael Collins was only provisional minister for finance.
Yep.
And all those who took part in that had to step down from the Irish Republican Brotherhood. And as you know, De Valera stepped down in 1917. And I was trying to something I was going to read out to you. Oh, it's here, I have it here. This is from Dermot Lynch, who I knew very well. And Dermot Lynch is the authority on 1916. He's the only person that survived the GPO. And he was the last man to leave the GPO. And he took down the tricolour flag. Our tricolour flag's never been captured by anybody.
and that is was ratified by the will of all the people on the 32nd county election of 1918. And that tricolour flag, you know, when it came here by John Francis Maher, it had the orange nearest to the pole, but it was ratified with the green nearest to the pole, white and orange, by the will of all the people on the 21st of January 1919. And I read you that part of Dermot Lynch's book, and that's the definitive work on 1916. And he was a very high up in the Irish Republican Brotherhood. The reason he survived 1916 and wasn't executed is that he got to America and had become an American citizen. Now, it was at this we're talking about 1917. It was at this time of renewal and acceleration of the activities in 1917 that a divergence of opinion as to the strategy became apparent between De Valera and the revitalized IRB. Eamon De Valera was a reluctant secret society member, and he now distanced himself from his former comrades in the IRB, arguing that the organization was no longer needed in the campaign for national independence. In contrast, Lynch, that's Dermot Lynch, was adamant, as was Michael Collins, that the IRB campaign had to continue and that it was only through the IRB method that independence would be achieved. I think that's very clear on that.
Absolutely.
And I think it's also very clear on say that money, as we said, was misappropriated by politicians. And I think it's come to the stage now that Fianna Fáil must be asked, where they got the money, to set up, where did De Valera get the money to set up Fianna Fáil and to set up the Irish Press? And Cumann na Gael has to be asked, where did they get the money to set up, Fine Gael? And of course the answer is, it's that money. And I think we spoke about it, Vincent, and you've done a piece of research on that with Judge Cohen in America and that.
Yeah.
And the Americans have always sided with Britain. Every time. That is our money. And we need that money today.
The reason they've always sided with Britain, of course, is because they too are under the control of Britain. Of the Crown, rather.
That is, in a nutshell.
That's exactly, I mean, and there's no, I can't see anybody offering a cogent argument against that, Billy. I've never even heard anybody try.
No.
It's one of those things they just don't talk about.
No, and I always ask Americans, and I've asked very high-powered, council and that, and politicians. I ask them, well, where is the United States of America getting their sovereignty from? And of course they look at you as if you had two heads, and they're not able to answer it. And then after a while they all sort of to and fro make comments and say, oh, we get from the Constitution. You don't get sovereignty from the Constitution. You get it from God. And what their problem is, the Constitution is from mankind. It's like our citizens, they're sovereign citizens. But we don't even know what the Americans are, and as far as the Crown is concerned...
Well, as it turns out, we sort of do in one sense, because the American governments are very happy, it seems, to say that anybody who attempts to declare themselves a sovereign citizen is effectively a terrorist.
Yeah.
Which, of course, again, logic and reason dictates that's coming directly from the Crown. And the reason for that is so simple, folks, it's so simple. They keep, and they have been using this term for so long, saying the Crown, the Queen, the Sovereign. And they say it as a singular, whereas all people are sovereign. But they claim, effectively, that only the Crown or the wearer of the Crown is sovereign.
That's it.
At least on their land, anyway. But, and then they also try the same with what they call the Commonwealth. I mean, that's why, for example, they accept the Vatican's sovereignty, because they're not a part of the British Empire and never were. As far as I know, they're a separate sovereign state, supposedly. That's their status.
Well, that you are on about that, and as you know, I don't know whether you have that photograph of in 1950.
I do, and that's how it's gone. Will I upload that for everyone to have a look at?
You can, of course.
Okay, I'll do that now while I'm talking.
The important point in that, in 1950, I think it was called, this is the Marian Year or something like that, my father and mother were invited, by Pope Pius XII, and he gave them a private audience and a state banquet. And that was the first time that to commemorate that the state was a sovereign republic of Era. My father went there as president of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, and you'll see on that photograph, you'll see the Pope's throne, and they were actually invited by the Pope to sit on that throne. My mother sat on that, and so did my father sit on that.
They actually sat on it? Oh, that's interesting.
Sorry?
That's interesting.
It is.
that's a rare something. I don't quite know. Probably have to ask someone. That is something that's very rare in those days. But the whole point of that was that's when the Irish. I'm sorry, Vincent.
No, you're fine.
I've had the flu. But
you have indeed.
That was the start. And this is what's so important of the peace, reconciliation and prosperity process. And that was one of the issues that was discussed at the private audience. And we had the blessing of the Pope. And that was founded by the Irish Republican Brother in 1950. And he consecrated the oils as well. And I was anointed as the heir when my father passed away in 1964. Well, it was actually in 1950.
Now, just explain that last bit there, Billy.
Well, I don't understand the Vatican really and what they do and what they don't do. But on that occasion when the Pope Pius XII invited my father and mother to Rome, well, it would be my father really, he was inviting the Irish Republican Brotherhood. And that's how that came about. If you go back to Pope Pius XI, then John Francis McGuire of the Cork Examiner, he had a title from the Pope, you know, and defended a lot of exposed a lot of the corruption and slavery and maladministration that was Britain's maladministration around the world. You know, he didn't get any brownie points. The Pope was in it, and that's, I think, where all that comes from, you know. But I think that's very important. But the importance of that, it was predicated on that visit of that the Truth Commission would come out. And you'd start in 1912 when the covenant, the Ulster Volunteer Covenant was signed. Now, that's sovereignty. The Ulster Unionist people and all the people in Northern Ireland, they're all sovereign citizens in the Sovereign Republic of Erin. But in Britain, they're only subjects to the Crown. I often wonder how they can, what do they think of that? But anyway, as it happened to the Hebrew people, in 1913, they took the covenant and they took it to war. And as we have made it clear, it's not the crown that is the sovereign. It is the harp. And you never take the harp to war because the consequences, as you know, in history, has always been, tragic for people. That's what happened to the Hebrews. When we spoke about King David, playing the harp, but what he was actually teaching was how to understand and read the harp for the benefit of mankind. You know, we talk about the first string being the measuring tape, thumb line, straight edge, and how you build and all that. But they took that to war they declared war in 1914. And as you know, in 1155, Pope Adrian IV, he gave it to Henry II to build his empire. And that caused the Hundred Years' War. And the harp was still up on the coat of arms of the Crown of England. But it was taken down the Fleur-de-Lis in France. And we talk often about, Queen Elizabeth. She respects that very much. And as you know, for the visit here to the Garden of Remembrance.
She does because she knows what it is.
He understands it. She has to understand it.
Yep.
She carries that on every occasion. If she's leaving, Buckingham Palace, the standard with the harp has to be taken down. She has to carry that on all occasions. And the Union Jack is put up. And they're the fact. And if she's going to Windsor Castle, the Union Jack is taken down and the standard is thrown with the harp. It is the harp that is the sovereign, not the crown. Crown is royalty.
Now what I've done, I've uploaded that picture there, folks, and I've put the link into the chat box. So you can have a look at that there now, and you'll see it's an old black and white photo. Try and explain to people what they're looking at here, Billy.
Right.
So there's...
They're Swiss guards.
They're the Swiss guards either side.
And you see the throne and the background. Now, it is quite rare, I believe. There's another function of when the Pope invites, I know he invited my father and he invited my mother to sit on that throne when they were, I presume.
Well, he invited your father over as the president of the IRB or as the president of the Sovereign Republic of Erin or both.
That's it. And that's the first time I believe that the Vatican had recognized the Sovereign Republic of Erin, And you must consider the time in it, when the Catholic Church was very, very powerful and, ruled. And, excuse me, that's what it was about. But I think we have to get the background correct. And we have to move on. And this Good Friday Agreement that they're talking about flags and they're talking about the past. But how can they talk about that when the Irish Republican Brotherhood are treated with contempt and snubbed on every occasion? I mean... and we're not invited to talks. I don't know how you can, you know, I don't know how you can square that. And I don't know how you can square in August 1919 that King George V of England declared Dáil-Éireann to be an illegal assembly.
Well, what amazed me about that was, again, it was put out there that when the Crown was meeting the so-called Irish delegation, that I keep seeing people saying, oh, they were plenipotentiaries that were sent over. And they couldn't possibly have been because the Crown didn't treat them as such. The Crown refused to recognise them.
It didn't recognise.
Exactly. So they effectively said, as far as we are concerned, whoever is coming over here from Ireland are subjects of the Crown. And it begs the question, if that's the case, how can you have an international treaty?
Well, and
consider it valid? It can't possibly be.
It can't be, Vincent. And how, if you declare Dáil-Éireann to be an illegal assembly, then who did you have your treaty with?
And why are the people over here accepting that? Still, to this very day, Billy, they're still accepting it.
Exactly. And the point is, but, you know, when you talk here about, every time I ask, you know, historian to start at that, oh no, that can't be discussed. And I say, why? And every time, as you know, RTE, and I'm on all the time trying to get them to even mention that next Wednesday is the 96th anniversary of the Sovereign Republic of.
Well, okay, I'd like to put that out there to everybody. So I'm going to ask the listeners now, there's a lot of people listening online right now. I'm asking you all, tomorrow, begin to phone and email all the different media outlets that you can. Take an hour, even take an hour, and phone and call and email as many as you possibly can, and ask them to acknowledge that and to, you know, for public interest, let the people know.
Yeah, what about the papers? I'm told by any journalist, we're not allowed to interview you because you're president of the Irish Republican Brotherhood. And I mean, as you know, I wrote to Enda Kenny and asked, invited him. Normally, I don't invite anybody. The only people that are ever notified are the Indians, because India's independence came out of going to tell. But where can we see this one now? Oh, yes, here we are. This is the letter I wrote to Minister for Arts, Heritage and the Gaeltacht, Heather Humphreys, TD, has asked me to express her regret that she will be unable to attend the turning of the sovereign of the, no, the turning of the seal due to existing diary commitments at that time. And this is Heather Humphreys, Department of Arts, Heritage and the Gaeltacht.
Okay, so she's not denying it exists, and she's not denying any significance. She's not saying anything negative about it. She's just basically saying she can't make it due to prior commitments.
Same.
And you see, I always look for what do they not say in these things, Billy?
Well, I think you're right. And
besides what they do actually apparently say.
Wait till I see that one.
Well, I'll tell you, while you're looking at that, there's a few things that have just gone up through the chat box there, and I'll just address, and you let me know whether you agree as we go. One question was, would Billy give a license to Irish Water? I could probably answer that one if they offered you £1 million, Billy.
Why would I give an Ireland a license when it's owned by the sovereign citizens?
Exactly.
And why, I mean, would they give, look, I keep on saying, the point of the whole issue is, that all licenses are only legal valid from the 21st of January to the 20th of January each and every year.
That's
when they return to the sovereign citizens. I mean, you're the sovereign.
That's right.
I'm not the sovereign. You are. And to the sovereign.
And you see, that's the point, Billy, that so many people keep, the people who talk against you, okay, I'm going to address this because there's a small few out there talking against you, as you know, and trying to corrupt what it is you're saying and trying to convince people you're saying things that you are not saying. And what they keep trying to convince people is that somehow this Billy Maguire man and this IRB are trying to take over everything, you see. This is what they keep trying to push out there. And there's some deception going on. And, of course, many people have said to them, I don't know where you're hearing this because that's not what's actually being said. It's not the intention. And, in fact, once people realize their sovereignty, that's impossible anyway.
I mean, you're the sovereign. I mean, I'm not the sovereign. And, but the point I'm saying to you there, look, Vincent, well, we look at the letter, the Taoiseach, and I would say provisional Taoiseach, Mr. Endicott.
Yeah, that's all he can be.
Has asked me to refer to your invitation to attend the Irish Republican Brotherhood.
Which is, that by the way, is recognition from him too.
That the first time ever, right?
Yeah, I mean, if his office has stated that, then that clearly is a recognition that you're a legitimate organization or whatever as far as they're concerned.
Time. 96th anniversary of the turning of the sovereign seal of Dáil-Éireann ceremony on the 21st of January 2015. The Taoiseach has asked me
that due to prior commitments, he regrets that he is not in a position to accept your kind invitation. The Taoiseach extends his best wishes. Yours sincerely, Niamh O'Brien, Appointment Secretary. And
right, so
is very important. 18th of December, 2014.
As I said, again,
McGuire.
People need to recognize not only what's been said, but what's not being said. So they're not denying it, Billy.
No.
They're not saying.
How can they deny it?
I know, but this is what I'm saying. See, but the, you know, some of the listeners may not understand the nuances here. So I'm trying to go through the nuances for the listener.
That's true.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I really want people to think about that. Don't just think about what was said. Think about what they did not say. In other words, they didn't write to Billy McGuire and say, Billy McGuire, this is all non-existent, nonsense. We don't believe it. It's not legitimate.
For your mythology.
They didn't say any of that.
No.
They simply said, oh, well, that's very sorry, we can't attend, but thank you for the kind invitation. I mean, if I didn't believe you were having a birthday party, Billy, I wouldn't write back to you and say, thank you for inviting me to your non-existent birthday party.
That's true. And if you look at the page, Office of the Taoiseach, and they have our sovereign seal up on it, right? 12 strings, but no air underneath. So it's not the Sovereign Republic of Air.
No.
It's Mr. De Valera's.
Well, it's an attempt at deception again. That's essentially what it is. They're trying to deceive everybody into thinking that they are part of the Sovereign Republic of Ireland. Essentially, that's what they're trying to do. Would you agree with that, Billy?
That's what they're trying to do, but they're not, because they don't recognise it. You can see yourself.
No, exactly. But there's a couple of questions that went up there. Paddy Mackey basically said, so why did the Crown not try to get the Irish people into subscription for World War II? And I would suggest that, quite simply, they were too busy trying to convince people over here that, inverted commas, you're still a free state under your own control, as it were. But I'll guarantee you, if they actually got to the stage where they felt it was needed, they would have.
Would, of course, because they can come in here any time. We're only a small island in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
And there, and that's been always the...
Well, I think the Irish people have always recognised that, Billy. That, look, I mean, I believe there was even a plan in the 1960s, the mid-60s or something, that if there was ever a large nuclear accident from one of their power plants in England, that their intention was to just literally ship 10 million people to Ireland.
That's it, that's it.
And if the defence forces here were to give them any trouble, they would just casually brush them aside. I mean, we have to face this here in Ireland. We're not a military might, and we're probably never going to be.
Well, look, Vincent, the Irish Republican Brotherhood abhor war.
Absolutely.
They abhor violence.
As do I.
They abhor.
As do all reasonably minded intellectual people.
That's what they are.
Because war is merciless. It kills indiscriminately.
It doesn't care.
Yeah.
We have the most warlike neighbours in the world beside us.
And yeah, again, I keep saying to people, look, stop thinking in terms of Irish and English and British. This is the Crown structure we're talking about here, folks, because it's the Crown that's controlling all of it. Now, I've often said it, Billy, that it's the British, the English, the Welsh, the Scottish people. They're the people who are actually even more enslaved, if you will, than the Irish.
That's true. And, you know, the sad thing is that if a DNA test was done on all British people, we're all the same.
Yeah.
But it's the maladministration.
Actually,
we are poor.
Speaking of DNA, you sent me something there on De Valera a while back, where they're still claiming De Valera's... Well, apparently they're claiming De Valera's parentage was the Vivian guy. And I was thinking, wouldn't it be interesting if somebody were to do a DNA test?
Yes.
What do you think would show up, Atkinson or Gubbins?
Yeah.
I don't think we'd find a...
And their descendants are here still.
Of course.
And they could easily you know, this is what, this mythology that's going
actually,
on.
Actually, I'll put that photo up as well for everybody to have a look at as well, because I scanned that in.
Did you do the Ted Kennedy one?
I'll put the Ted Kennedy one up as well now, yeah, I'll do that right now as well.
And as you know, because that photograph is my father. He brought the Kennedys here. Sorry, Vincent.
No, you're fine.
You know, for the Peace, Reconciliation and Prosperity course. And Connie Fitz was from out near where, which would be right near Bruree. And the Atkinson estate is the other side of the road from Bruree, you know, as you go towards Ballingarry.
Well, I think perhaps we should say, I mean, I know it's a bit crude, but, and we are kind of jumping around a little bit, but and the reason I'm talking about this is because there's too many people out there seem to have the opinion that De Valera was in a position that effectively he can't possibly have been in, which was that he was the president of a sovereign country. He couldn't have been.
Well, he wasn't there the first day anyway.
No.
We know he was in Lincoln Jail, but we don't know what went on in Lincoln Jail. But if you read the Vaughan Hotel papers and the intelligence officer's report, they claim he was being brainwashed by the British. And
Well, I think that's, yeah. What's this is from an Irishman's diary. I'm just uploading it now, folks, and you'll be able to see this now shortly. But I remember you telling me when I was down with you, Billy, those names, Atkins and Gubbins, and you showed me the estates and where they lived and all the way they lived, and you told me other background information about it, and you used the term that Katie Call was would have been referred to, along with others, I believe, as the rent book. Do you want to maybe explain to people what that essentially...
Oh, well, that's what they... You know, she was a very good-looking girl, and that's what the landlords, they abused all those people who worked for them, you know, in their estates, you know. And all, they were all at it. I mean, it wasn't just one. That was their way of, you know, carrying on. I mean, I knew that old Atkinson man, you know, and as you know, in County Limerick, they don't say T-H-E, they say D. And when the young Carl came back from America, the people in Bowie wanted to know when they saw him, was he the Divil's son or was he young Gubbins? And that was what they decided he was the Divil's son. And that's where, I mean, there's 14 theories of De Valera's name and that, and colluded with, of course, the Church of Ireland and the Catholic Church. And as you know, old Atkinson, he went to become a priest in Monkwood College. And Atkinson, he offered to pay for his education, whether he did it or not.
And again, you see, even that must, I mean, that's something that other historians, if you will, they don't really address, do they, Billy? They don't say, well, why would this guy just suddenly decide to pay for this young book's education? For what reason?
And to become that was a Jesuit college, Monkwood College, and you know, I mean, the whole thing is, and he died in you. I knew that old Atkinson.
Well, I think the idea was that they seemed to do this all over India as well. The Crown operatives did the same in India, that they would have plenty of children out of wedlock, as it were, and they'd be kind of a blend, a mix of the two, you know, half English, as it were, half Indian, and they would pay for their education too, so they'd be beholden to them. And then eventually, if the locals were getting restless, they would use these guys as sort of go-betweens to subdue the people.
Well, Vincent, you make a very good point there, and again we'll go back to De Valera's 37th Constitution, which he colluded with the British, and he rejigged, as you know, the Sovereign Constitution. And we go back again to the name of the state, his era, or in the English language, Ireland. The name of the state is the Sovereign Republic of Erin. They would not allow him to put in Republic in the 37th.
Oh, I've had that one so many times where people try to say to me, oh, well, Ireland is a republic. And I say, no. It's described as a republic. The Ireland Inc., that, if you will, that's operating at the moment since 1937. That's Ireland Incorporated. And they described it as a republic in 1949. Read the legislation, folks, if you don't believe me. It's written in there, literally in black and white. That's how they described it. But it is not a republic. That corporate entity is not a republic.
And there it is there. And you go into court. This is why I'm always making this point. What constitution is your case being heard under?
Almost nobody ever asks, Billy, which I find even more incredible. I keep saying to people, go in and ask them, or even better, go in and tell them.
What you want your case to be heard.
Yes. Say, here is the constitution. You may hear a case which involves me. Other than that, no thank you.
And here we have the name of the state is Era, or in the English language, Ireland. And then Article 5, Ireland's a sovereign, independent, democratic state. Ireland's a sovereign republic, independent, democratic, which De Valera. And how is it that Fianna Fáil will not address that issue? I can't understand it. I can't understand why people going into court won't ask the question. That tricolour flag that's over those courts, that's our tricolour flag, Irish Republican Brotherhood. We keep all those in trust for the sovereign citizens. And when you see our sovereign seal up in the courts, 13 strings, and you go out and you look at the four courts, and you see the sovereign trinity desecrated, it isn't even properly aligned. You know, they have the harp of the psaltery first, and then they have the sovereign seal after the tricolour flag on the home stick, you know. And I think it is, I can't understand people who allow that to go on, and these learned judges and all these people who are literally getting millions out of the state, the Sovereign Republic of Erin, and they want to address it. I can't understand that. That to me is something unbelievable. And I would also like, Vincent, there, as you know, as we are talking about the Sovereign Constitution, we mentioned the five constitutions. You have the Sovereign Constitution. Then you have the Free State De Valera, the Free State Constitution, which was imposed by King George V in the Shelburne Hotel. And then you have De Valera's 37th.
And then you have the British Constitution. And then you have the European Union Constitution. And,
yeah, the so-called renamed, rehashed Lisbon.
I should look.
And well, that's what it became, Lisbon.
And then we're told, oh, you have to vote again. That's not democracy.
No.
And here we are. We go to the sovereign constitution. To thee, most holy Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, we, the people of Ireland, dedicate our constitution and beg the guidance of the Holy Spirit that it may be in consonance with thy divine will and contribute to the greater glory. Amen. This constitution shall be the constitution of the Republic of Ireland, proclaimed in arms on Easter Monday, April the 24th, 1916, and established by the will of all the people of Ireland on January the 21st, 1919. Article 1. The sovereignty of the nation is inalienable. It is therefore not within the competence of any generation of the people to surrender that sovereignty which each generation holds in trust for the nation. The question of surrender of national independence may not be submitted to an electorate. Subject to that fundamental principle, it is hereby declared that all authority in Ireland, legislative, executive and judicial, and all powers of government are derived solely under God from the people of Ireland. These powers are inherent in the people alone. By virtue of their sovereignty, they must be exercised in accordance with the principles of liberty, equality, and justice for all. Any legislation not in accordance with these principles is hereby declared to be null and void.
Yeah.
Isn't that a wonderful, isn't it? And there you are.
And that's as simple as it needs to be. I mean, somebody was asking earlier on about the law, and I said, look, the law is Brehon law because at the time, English common law was discarded, and the only law that was left here was our ancient Brehon law.
That's it.
And it's a default position.
And Vincent, very important on that, the land of Ireland belongs to all the citizens of Ireland and to them alone. You don't have to go any further than that.
Yep.
And that's the constitution. That's why King George V was up in arms against that, because that's the constitution that divided up all these landlords' estates and gave the land back to the citizens.
Well, let's actually talk about that for a second, Billy, because, I mean, I know of people who are involved in land deals, etc., up in North County Dublin,
right.
And they discovered that the land essentially was divided by the Land Commission.
Which was the Congested District Board first, then the Land Commission.
Yeah.
The Land Commission was up beside Bones Hotel, and that's the constitution.
Oh, yeah, no, but that's what I'm saying, like, they're still in, it was still in place.
Yeah.
Like, they are still honoured to this day.
Yes.
Now, somebody else
their
is asking... Yeah, somebody else is asking there about the sovereignty. Okay, well, I'll talk about this one for a sec. The sovereignty with the 13 strings, I actually put up a video on YouTube, folks, explaining that, and as Billy explained it to me, that the 13th string was referred to as the Judas string. But maybe you'll just re-explain that, Billy. Hello?
Yes?
Sorry, I lost you. The 13th string. The Judas string. Can you just explain why that was placed there?
You see, that was over the 1922. You see, you must remember that all those that took part in the Royal Dáil and Senator Ráchtas in 1922 that was imposed by King George V, that's British apartheid system and a provisional government and for an Orange Free State, they all had to step down from the Irish Republican Brotherhood and did. Because the Irish Republican, Dáil Éireann has never ratified the Anglo-Irish Treaty and it never ratified the EEC accession treaty or the EU accession treaty. What happened was Britain wanted to join Europe. And de Gaulle wouldn't allow them because we were only a provisional government and what he had left set up. He couldn't have that. I wouldn't have that in Europe.
Yeah.
So when he died, they were just sneaked into, you know, we had no choice but to follow Britain in. And,
well, of course, you see what they said, you see, and a lot of people have looked at that and they disguised it by doing the following. They said, oh, well, Ireland's application is still going to continue regardless as to what the UK were doing.
Exactly, yeah.
But the application did continue, but there was what they didn't say, of course, always look for what they don't say, folks. What they didn't say was that they couldn't possibly get in unless the UK got in because Ireland, the incorporated 26 county business, which is essentially what it is, it's a business, they couldn't let them in without the say so and the okay of the UK.
That's exactly the point. And we didn't go in, you see, as a sovereign, independent, democratic state.
No. Nope.
We went in as a corporation.
That's all.
That's all really, and this thing about owing all this money, we don't owe €1 to the European Union or to anybody else. Our currency is the pund with the sovereign seal in the front and the harp in the back. And here we are talking about Mary McAleese, right? And, wait till I see now.
Sorry, just to go back to the string. Essentially, the Judas string was, yes, if anybody was a traitor, essentially, that was the string that went round our neck.
That's exactly the point. And that's what it was. You were hung if you desecrated. And when you read the proclamation, Vincent, it's all on the proclamation. And here's Mary McLeese saying, "It has been a fascinating," this is when the Queen's speech in Dublin Castle, "it has been a fascinating two-way street between Britain and bestowing on Ireland our system of common law, parliamentary tradition, independent civil servants, and gracious Georgian buildings, love of English literature, and are obsessed with the park." But, there you are. That's English common law. She's saying that's what the courts are under. And can they deny it? No. And why does all these learned judges, why don't they come out, what we've just been reading? They tell you, if you ask any civil servant, "Oh, we only uphold the 37 Constitution." They don't. And why are they leaving
They don't even uphold that. And I mean, again, I have a book here, the annotated version of the Constitution, where De Valera effectively says, I mean, I'll read it verbatim if people want to hear it. I have it marked in here somewhere. But De Valera effectively says in this book, it's the Gill and Macmillan annotated Constitution of Ireland, where De Valera says that the Constitution is always, effectively what he says is, it's always to be interpreted in favour of we the people. Now, if you look at the Constitution, folks, as it stands, and you'll see that it's people, even as persons, are equal before the law. Nowhere in there does it offer any protection to corporate entities. So corporate entities, essentially, under the Irish Constitution of 1937, the Bun Reign Éireann, even though it is a commercial document, essentially, but not one corporation is mentioned to be offered protection. Only human persons, as it were, as in people with legal fiction identities even, they're to be protected, not corporations. And it begs the question, Billy, why are members of An Garda Síochána effectively assisting water meter installation by force?
And that's what they're doing. At the point, Vincent, as we've always said, that system, and we go back to King George V, when he executed all the Irish Republican Brotherhood leaders, all our intelligent people who set up and who funded and founded the state in 1916. And the importance of next Wednesday is that all licenses are only legal, valid, and bona fides from the 21st of January to the 20th of each and every year. And the importance of that is that all corporations have to have a license. The Lord Mayor of Dublin has to have a license.
Yes, and I mean, without a license, a corporate entity as such has only one other way of engaging with you, and that's with your agreement. And if you don't agree, because you're the sovereign, folks, and if you give that agreement to the company...
Or the courts.
But the courts are set up as a company as well, Billy. They're just a corporation as well.
But the point is, that's why it goes back to all the citizens, the sovereign citizens, and the sovereign government of the Sovereign Republic of Ireland on the 20th of January, and they then decide on the 21st who gets a license and who doesn't get a license, or if they have.
And of course, if the people approach and say we object to them getting a license for the following reasons,
yeah,
no license.
And there isn't one corporation has a license in this state. The banks haven't got one. The central bank hasn't got a license. And excuse me, Vincent. And
you're fine. Do you want to go and get a drink or something, Billy?
What?
Do you want to go and get a drink of water or something?
All right. And as you know, that is what the license is the key issue. And all this whole thing up to now was all a nod and a wink. Oh, it'll be all right. Bring in all those companies. Oh, it'll be all right. That day is gone. And that Garth Brooks concert proved it from America. Because you have all these corporations are coming in here and getting into Europe and moving on and without a license. And their own government in America, they don't even bother, have got to the stage, they don't even bother paying tax now to their own government. And they certainly don't pay anything here. And, it was great for us to, but it's gone totally corrupt. Like everything else, it's gone corrupted now. And I would like to see Christy Burke on Wednesday coming out on the steps. He won't allow us in, but he can come out the door.
Well, either way, I mean, your intention is to knock the door anyway, isn't it?
Oh, I'll knock the door anyway. And I'll ask him to show the license he has and to take down our tricolour flag. I mean, who gave him?
I mean, there's no, what I'm saying, there's no malicious intent here towards Christy.
Not.
It's just, Christy, you know, you happen to be in the position.
Yeah.
He happens to tell everybody he's a Republican. You know, it begs the question. There was a chap at the IRB AGM, Billy, and when he found out that Christy Burke was refusing permission, geez, we nearly had to give him a cup of sweet tea. He was in shock. He was like, what?
He told me, oh, you're Christy Burke, you'll be, you know, with
arms. And yet, I'm told he's now throwing the dart into, is it the Liffey or whatever he's throwing it in, with an admiralty hat on.
Yeah, that's right. There's a photograph of Christie's out in some boat out in the middle of the Liffey and out in Dublin Bay somewhere. And yeah, he's chucking the spear in and he's wearing an admiral hat.
And he's trying it on behalf of the Crown of England. Because he doesn't realise, and I had ructions, as you know, when Michael D. Higgins...
See, it begs the question, Billy, does he realise? I mean, you know, I mean, I say, yeah, okay, you can forgive somebody to a certain degree in that regard, but to claim or to feign ignorance when people are saying, Christie, you know, there's something wrong here, Christie.
And there's something very wrong when Michael D. Higgins went to Windsor Castle and took our tricolour flag without our permission. We wouldn't have given him permission anyway. And that the Admiralty, the Royal Admiralty, put a gold braiding round our tricolour flag. And I was told by a very reliable person, the Department of Foreign Affairs, they said, we didn't take the Irish Republic of Brotherhood's tricolour flag, we took a fourth colour. And that's the gold braiding round it.
They actually admitted they took a four-colour flag.
The four-coloured.
Well, oh, that's interesting. Well, you see, again, there's something that the people should be doing. Tomorrow, guys, somebody should be ringing the Department of Foreign Affairs and asking them. So, I mean, it can't all be... People can't put it all on your shoulders, Billy. They can't put it all on mine.
Because anyway, Vincent, you know.
Yeah, but we the people have to start doing this ourselves.
You have to. It's your sovereignty. And if you don't look after it, your children are going to be enslaved. And that's what I'm worried about. And there's more to being enslaved other than picking cotton, you know. It's now taxes. That's the new way of enslaving our people. And a tax for everything. That's going to be, and they don't care, these people. I mean, somebody told me the other day that the lotto has been sold to, I don't know what country, and without a license. Can you imagine? And all these people will benefit. You'll be buying tickets and they'll be getting all the profits.
Oh, well, I always call it the lotto a poor tax because essentially that's what it works out as.
Yeah. Which just shows you what's happened. All the seaweed was sold. Everything has been sold. And
again,
no license.
The seaweed, think about it. I mean, people should have been up in arms over that in fairness because the seaweed was sold to a Canadian company. And what happened in Canada when the Queen went over, Billy, she stood in front of them all. It's on YouTube. You can hear it, folks. And she told them, I am your queen, she said. She didn't let them think for a second she was there as a visitor. She was there to let them know, I'm the boss and I'm your boss.
And it's all about money.
So in other words, now we're told that the Crown has basically, effectively got, somehow purchased the seaweed from Ireland. Yeah.
And it's like the water. When that's sold, every drop of water that falls here in the Sovereign Republic of Ireland, will they'll be claiming it. And you'll be paying tax for it, and your children will be paying tax for it. And I'm looking here, you probably have you that map, Vincent, of... Well, you probably, the one I
not just a hand, but I can.
On,
yeah, I'll stick it up on the site afterwards. Yeah.
And the one I'll be claiming on Wednesday.
Yeah, I do.
Has
I do.
The largest
have it, yeah.
Territory, I'm told, in Europe. And if you look at the, this is an official map with a sovereign seal on it, and the Sovereign Republic of Ireland, and I, William James McGuire, will be claiming sovereignty over all the territory, rivers, lakes, seas, fishing rights, mineral rights. Minerals, licenses, there you are, and all the assets of the state on behalf of the sovereign citizens of the Sovereign Republic of Ireland and the Irish Republican Brotherhood, signed and sealed, and that will be signed and sealed on Wednesday, the 21st of January. Just look at the map. Look at what we have. Sure, my God, what we only got 4 or 5 million people in the whole place. If we can't make a living out of all that, and all these people coming in and they're just robbing all the assets of the state for themselves or pretending they're selling them off with a license. I mean, I would like to see that license that the lotto was sold on. I'd like to see Christie Burke's license on Wednesday. He should come out the door on Wednesday and show the license he has because he holds that on behalf of Dublin Corporation.
Well, I've just put the image into the chat box there for everybody to have a look at. If you click that link, folks, you'll see an image. You can see Poolbeg in the background and the Lord Mayor of Dublin, Christie Burke, apparently with the Admiral hat on and wearing his Lord Mayor change, which of course has the Sovereign Seal on it, and with a big spear, and he's chucking it into Dublin Bay. But actually, Billy, do you want to maybe explain to people, what's the idea of that ceremony?
Well, now I can tell you from our own family.
Yeah.
My father had ructions here. Our family are from Fermanagh, Lochearn. They owned it Fermanagh, Lochearn, and the River Shannon to the estuary of the Atlantic in Limerick. That's why we live in Limerick, you know, we owned it all that. And we used to always throw, we still do, I still do it, we throw the dart
or the spear. It's really a hazel one, is what it is, to claim ownership of the River Shannon, the estuary of the Atlantic. And that's going back to Celtic times. And, you know, Cuchonach Maguire was the last of my ancestors to own from Anna Loch Earn and the River Shannon. And then if you go back to Clonbrancis and that, and how the British, you know, conquered, they had to have the Shannon. And that was the Pale, as far as the Shannon. And that's, and to, then they evicted everybody to Heller, to Connacht, at the other side of the Shannon. They kept all the good land for themselves. And that's what's so important about that. And the Crown, and of course, when, Michael D. Higgins went to China, they wouldn't tolerate the gold braiding on the tricolour flag, because they came down here when that, remember the president there, he was vice president. And when he came here, and a delegation, which I spoke to you about before, from China, they went to the Department of Foreign Affairs, they did their homework, and they came down here and they asked me all about the sovereignty and about the tricolour flag and everything else, and I told them, they wouldn't announce anything, you know, they only came in. But they wouldn't allow, I'm told, the admiralty gold braiding to be put on our tricolour flag and take it to China. They wouldn't tolerate that. And it's amazing how he took that down to South Africa. And Michael D. Higgins never stood up and said in South Africa that in 1922, King George V imposed a British apartheid system for the 26 and 6 counties of Ireland as an Orange Free State and a provisional government. Isn't that what they have in South Africa?
Absolutely. And I always thought it was, well,
it's the same thing. It's an Orange
Free. Well, I mean, it was you know, when the Irish people were demanding an end to apartheid in South Africa, little did they realise it's happening here.
And why didn't they apply here? I mean, it's here, it's just happening every day of the week. And, I mean, we should look after. Look, the whole purpose of this, look, I don't want to go on and talk.
I mean, here's what I've always liked about the way you express things, Billy, is one, I know you're a straight talker, which I've always appreciated, and I'm sure all the listeners appreciate that you're a straight talker. And I understand you have to give out the information in the manner that you do. I've always appreciated that, and I don't think it can be heard often enough. But at the same time, you never actually complain as such. I mean, you do point out things you're not unhappy with, and I think you're quite right to be unhappy with them, but you're not actually complaining. You're saying to the people, this is your position. The people are sovereign. All they have to do is accept it. And the easiest way in the world to accept it, I mean, if 100,000 people showed up, Billy, on the 21st of January...
I'd be happy anyway.
You'd be happy enough for a while, would you?
I'd die happy anyway. We wouldn't have gone in vain for those people who went out in 1916. And the tragedy in 1916 should never have happened. If Britain hadn't capitulated to the Ulster UBF army in 1914, 1916, what were we fighting at? We wouldn't have accepted, we'd have got home rule, but we wanted a sovereign republic is what we wanted. And remember that Cromwell was the first republican here. We had to be republicans. Well, all those going back to Young Oranges and Fenian Brotherhood, which is a sister of...
Well, again, even that, I mean, I've been looking at some of the statements that were made by Bruton and whatnot about 1916. You know, these kind of strange statements that were made, Billy. And at one stage, he was suggesting, Home Rule was on the books anyway. And I saw another very interesting article, which was basically saying the reason Home Rule was even on the books was because of... the famine essentially got the Irish people into a position where they thought, okay, this far and no further.
That's it.
And essentially after that, and I'm gonna, well, the so-called famine, I can't even call it famine, but it was...
Don't even call it famine.
No, it was a genocide.
Our friend,
Chris Fogarty is actually a member of the
society.
He'd be emailing me as we speak. I apologize.
I apologize as one. It was the Holocaust. I mean, they...
Absolutely.
Found forces to call the food out.
Yeah. But, I mean, the point I was making is, that is where, everything that the IRB did, it essentially was, it had its roots in the genocide.
At the Holocaust.
Yeah, that's what it came from that. I mean, I've seen these other guys, Billy, trying to suggest, though, there was all sorts of other nefarious occult secret society mumbo jumbo garbage associated with this, and there quite frankly isn't. I mean, I made the point that, you know, for a start, the tricolour, the green, white and orange tricolour, became I know it had a history previously and it was used elsewhere, but it was adopted at noon on the 21st of January in the Mansion House as
the will of all the people.
By the will of all the people from the 1918-32 county election as the actual sovereign flag of the Sovereign Republic of Eire. And that's when, you see, people say, but it was used before. Yeah, we know it was used before. But on that day, when the sovereign government was formed, that was the flag that was chosen and selected and maintained. And to this day, you've been maintaining it, along with the sovereign seals and all the other symbols and the shamrock and all of that.
Well, Vincent, it's important to say here, the tricolour flag has never been captured by anybody.
No.
And as we stated, Dermot Lynch took it down from the GBO, and he was the last one there.
And the reason that matters, Billy, believe it or not, is, to the listener here I'm talking, the reason that matters is because to the Crown and the agents of the Crown, they operate this type of idea that if we capture your flag in battle, we've captured you eternally. And because they know they didn't, capture it in battle.
Captured the green flag, you know, the Republic green flag,
yeah.
Which James Connolly, you know, he was associated with the Citizens Army. They recall that. And that's what happened, the Labour, the Citizens Army. They didn't take part in the War of Independence. And they're still reeling from that fact. They actually believed that by their flag being captured by the Crown forces, they were defeated.
Yeah.
They have this defeatist attitude ever since. And they have a funny attitude.
Well, this is the point I'm trying to make, that people really need to think about that, that that's why they think that, because they had themselves that same attitude, that if their flag was captured in battle, inverted commas, that somehow they'd lost it forever.
That's it.
But whereas you can't lose your sovereignty, Billy, can you? I mean, if you're a slave... if you live to be 90 and you're a slave for 89.99 years, folks, on the last day before you die, if you accept your sovereignty, you're good to go.
That's it, that's it. And you see, it's all to do with your being. It's all to do with how you learn to write. You have the five senses. And it's all, and of course, I'm not allowed to mention the harp tonight. the harp is the covenant between God and man with all the information and knowledge for his planet Earth and our civilization.
And you see, that's one of the valid things you've always said, Billy. It's our civilization, folks. I mean, that's what people need to realize. There's another question coming in, Billy, from Derek here. Did Billy ever get a reply to his letter to Provisional, I'm going to call him, Chief Justice Susan Denham in 2012 on the invalidity of the courts and her non-jurisdiction in amending the Constitution?
No.
No response. Not even an acknowledgement there, was there?
I think I got
I thought there was an acknowledgement, yeah. As in, we've acknowledged your letter, end of story.
Yeah, but they never reply. And as you know, I wrote to Susan Denham, writer for Wednesday. And we didn't get a reply one way or whether she was coming or not. But it's quite extra. I mean, I've been asking Susan Denham and at least three of the previous Chief Justices to, the 37 Constitution. And, the name of the state is the Sovereign Republic of Eire. And what are they going to say in Europe on Thursday morning when Enda Kenny has declared he is not going to attend the ceremony of the Sovereign Republic of Eire, of Dáil Éireann? So what's he talking about? He's gone over then, lying through his teeth in Europe and pretending that's our tricolour flag. And I mean, I think it is a shocking situation that to desecrate our sovereignty and our sovereign seals and those people that went out and gave their lives for us and education. And, how are they going to square that in Europe?
Again, Billy, it begs the question. I mean, I think personally that the Crown and its agents and its operatives, if you will, at the moment are very concerned, about herself, health-wise, again, what with the year that's coming up, the anniversary that's coming up.
Right.
And I think they're very worried that Charlie will get in because, I mean, and I know this is going to be controversial to many people, but I've read Charles' book, a lot of information.
Well, Harmony, that's an interesting book.
I've been researching a lot about him. It seems as if he holds a different mindset to his mother.
I would hope so. But I mean, the point is, look, they've never been fair to Ireland. And you saw it yourself. They always took the side. America takes Britain's side against us. The Crown took the Unionist side. I mean, Guinnesses were a Unionist family and given all that money. And I must point out that, when we became a free state government, of course, colluded with Guinnesses because they were collecting all the tax on...
Well, again, I mean, this is another point. I was talking to somebody during the week and this came up, that in one sense, the mass immigration emigration, pardon me, from Ireland to America, in one sense, has saved us to this day, because there are so many Irish people in America who claim Irish descendancy, that the Americans wouldn't get away with, you know, with effectively attacking anyone here in Ireland. You know, even under the nod and a wink from the crowd.
But what I like about your program, Vincent, and all the first time I ever met you, is that your program, and you always try to get solutions to problems.
Yeah.
And there are plenty of problems out there. If you don't put the problems up on the table and show them, how are you going to solve them?
Well, again, I mean, I'm going to give, again, I always like to give credit where it's due. Seeking solutions, that came straight from the lips of Harry O'Reilly.
Oh.
And I thought, well, you know what, Harry, that's absolutely bang on. I agree with that. And that's when we decided, yep, we're going to change the whole ethos and operation of the website and the way we're doing things. We're here seeking. I mean, we always were seeking solutions, but Harry put it into the words. He said, look, somewhere on the site, it needs to be seeking solutions. And I went, you know what, you're absolutely correct.
Yeah, but if there's propaganda, lies, and deception, nobody can sort that out.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what's happening. I mean, if they're not honest enough, and I give out about John Bruton, because John Bruton and Dick Spring and Michael D. Higgins and Jim Kemmy and Hugh Coveney were the ones who got rid of Vaughan Chattel. That's what the state was found.
That actually came up today at the meetup, and I was even talking to somebody about the movie Michael Collins. I said, that movie was filmed in Vaughan's hotel. There was a chap who was actually at the meetup today. He said, I used to work up the road from it, he said, and I remember them filming it at the time. He said, I just didn't know what they were filming and where, you know, the he didn't understand the significance of the building, if you will, historically.
But Vincent,
and then, of course, I said, well, that's when they were finished that, then they gutted the thing.
Gutted it. They hadn't gone out the door when they got it, and they sold it, as you know. It was Siptu because of James Connolly is the reason why Siptu had that. And to gut that building, is there any other state in the world who would tolerate, you saw it the day we were up there.
It would be the equivalent of America opening a McDonald's in the Alamo. In fact, I better not say that, they probably will.
I won't go up there anymore because it'll probably, the next time I go up there, it'll be probably one of those things that you're talking about. But there's a nice, you know, the Sovereign Republic of Era with the Sovereign Seal and the tricolour on the home stick at the heart of the Sovereignty. And, there's the Irish, have you that, the official website of the Irish Republic Brotherhood?
The link is in the chat box there for everyone now.
And you have the GPO, and then you have the 1916 proclamation, you have Vaughan Chattel, and you have the Sovereign Constitution, and you have the Mansion House. And 1919, the Sovereign Republic of Era, 2015, 96 years, the 96th anniversary of Dáil Éireann, the 96th anniversary of the Sovereign Republic, Dáil Éireann courts, in the bracket four courts, and the 96th anniversary of the War of Independence, 21st, 2015, and that'll be on next Wednesday. But to me, there won't be one politician outside the Mansion House. That's where Dáil Éireann was ratified by the will of all the people, not in Leinster House.
No.
And all these politicians, not one of them will attend. Isn't that scandal?
Yeah.
And you should see, you saw the state of Vaughan Chattel where the state was founded.
Well, again, I mean, they effectively can't bring themselves to attend because they, deep down, Billy, they know who they're operating under. I mean, I see there was one of the letters from the Mansion House came. I just think I'd raise this because they were attempting to say there was one year there was conduct they weren't pleased with about the attendees they claimed of the Sovereign Seal ceremony.
I do remember that.
And actually, the people they were complaining about was, in fact, who was a wonderful man and a wonderful woman. It was Declan Waugh and the Girl Against Fluoride who were outside with signs. And we asked them, would you mind look, and they weren't actually on the Mansion House premises, they were actually on the footpath outside, and we said, look, would you mind, the day that's in it, would you mind moving off down the road, and we explained to them why, as we say, we know Declan Waugh, we know the Girl Against Fluoride, wonderful people, they do great work, and they said, oh, I'm very sorry, of course we will, they were delighted to, and that's what they used as an excuse to say that somehow there was conduct wasn't appropriate.
That's right.
Everybody was, I mean, the one thing I've said, and I've always said this about you too, Billy, and the people who've attended Turning of the Seal, up to now, it's always been so, so dignified.
Hasn't it?
And that's what I think it nearly burns a hole in their head that we are, and all the attendees are so dignified. It's a silent dignity as well.
Even the Garda Síochána.
And it's admirable. It's really, it's just incredible.
And the Garda Síochána, you know, they're amazed. And I mean, I've always said to them, you know, their Seven Strings IV Irish Volunteers, their first day on duty was the 21st of January 1919. and they became the Garda Síochána, and they were, that's where they come from. Eight strings, IV, Sogra na Héireann, and there's seven. And how many of the Garda Síochána know that? I mean, I didn't even know it at the time. Just took out notes and were writing it down. And how dignified the whole situation was. And you remember that Harry O'Reilly and myself, you know, the Dublin City Council were having a commemoration for 2016. And I had been on to, I think it was John Tierney, his office, and he was living at the time. And I think he was taking up the Irish Water. And, you know, I was trying, they were spending 80 million or something up in Parnell Square. And I was asking them, you know, I've always keep on asking them to purchase Vaughan's Hotel for the state and for the people who were sovereign. That's where the state was founded. And I was in contact with them all the time. And then one of their people in the office told me, oh, we're having a commemoration for 2016 and a 2-day conference. And, and they said, oh, I said, I'd love to attend. And they asked me then, and I said, well, I'll be able to go up for the Friday.
Yeah, so there was an invitation.
And you even sent the email or
that's right.
Downloaded. And you sent. So, I arrived on Friday morning, and Harry, who was chairman at the time, he was there before me, and they had these young people on the door, and we weren't allowed to attend, and the Lord Mayor, I think, was that Ushin Quinn's year? I'm not sure that now.
I'd have to double check that, yeah.
Anyway, he was there opening it, and the Irish Republican Brotherhood weren't allowed in.
Well, I've just put a link into the chat box there, and the reason I've put it in is, if you ask any politician in Ireland at the moment, folks, anybody acting as a politician, when was the state founded, they will all tell you 1922, right?
Well, there was no state founded.
Of course not. But here's the interesting thing. I mean, I've just put in the link to president.ie, past presidents, and if you look at that, you'll see the first president they have listed is Douglas Hyde, 25th of June, 1938. So it begs the question, well, if they say the so-called state was created and came to be in 1922, was there a new state formed according to them in 1938? They don't say there was. And yet then they try to argue, oh, well, that state is somehow not under the crown. Think about it. I mean, Brehan Law has the, which of course the crown uses as well, to every cow its calf. I mean, you know, the 1922 Free State, whether you like it or not, bred and gave birth to the 1937 Constitution.
That's it.
And it is still, it's a lesser constitution in many ways than the 1922 one.
But Vincent, I mean, what are they going, in 2016, which is just round the corner, I mean, what state are they going to commemorate? What are they actually going to commemorate? And somebody told me today that some crowd are writing a new proclamation. You can't, if you read the proclamation, that is treason for those people even to attempt that. Sovereign and indefeasible. And it tells you quite clearly on that document.
Well, if they write a proclamation, let's say somebody else decides to write a proclamation tomorrow, okay? The way I see it, Billy, is, well, if they get it passed by a 32-county mandated vote from the people, who'd have an argument? But will they be able to manage that?
Yeah, but a sovereign constitution maybe, but not a proclamation. Because if you look at the proclamation, which you're an expert on, but I get out my own one here now if I can find it. Well, let's go and get it now. Hold a second. And our proclamation is, you know, that's the foundation document of the state, the Sovereign Republic of Air.
Yes.
So if they try to do another one, then we're not Sovereign Republic of Air.
Well, you see, again, I've said to people, well, let's say somebody attempted to do that and they get their 32-county recognition of it, even a new proclamation that they wrote, they still have a problem. They have a problem under international law. That there's no international recognition. Whereas, there is international recognition for the 1916 proclamation. And lacking that, you have a problem with international law. You literally would become an island and you wouldn't literally, if you put a boat in the water, you'd be in trouble if you tried to leave it.
Not only that, you wouldn't have a passport to go to any country in the world.
Exactly.
If you had the sovereign seat.
You'd have no treaty in place, yeah.
You wouldn't be, I'm still looking for the, hold on, we'll go to this one. Well, have a look at the proclamation there.
I have it in the wall here in front of me.
Well, if you just go to, you know, and I think it's, you know, who founded the state? This thing that Owen McNeill founded the Irish Volunteers and all that. It's like Michael Cusick founded the GA. He didn't. Michael Cusick was fronting for the Irish Republican Brotherhood. And the GA is our organization. It was the Irish Republican Brotherhood who founded the GA. And, I mean, then you have Owen McNeill founded the Irish Volunteers. He didn't. And we'll just look at the proclamation and
Having organized and trained her manhood through her secret revolutionary organization, the Irish Republican Brotherhood, and through her open military organization, the Irish Volunteers and the Irish Citizens Army. Isn't that telling you very clearly, Vincent?
Yes.
But isn't that telling you who founded the Irish Volunteers and the Irish Citizens Army?
It's crystal clear as far as I can see.
Well, what's this? I mean, this propaganda and lies and deception go on. And here we are. And this thing about, Mulcahy, you know, in 1924, I believe, this is the greatest one they're out now. And of course, the reason for that is that, Cumann na Gael has to answer the question, where did Fine Gael get the money to found Fine Gael? Where did, De Valera get the money to buy the Irish Press and to found Fianna Fáil? And they got it from Friends of Irish Freedom in America. That was robbed. And that is owed to the Irish Republican Brotherhood. And when we get that money back, which we're going to ask for now, we will purchase Vaughan's Hotel, and we will have it as a proper, where the state was founded, and we'll purchase Moore Street. And if you look at this thing about, oh, Mulcahy got rid of the Irish Republican Brotherhood in 1924, he did in his hat get rid of the Irish Republican. He had the right to get rid of anything. He had to step down in 1922 from the Irish Republican Brotherhood, like the rest of them. The long usurpation control of Irish citizens to be sovereign and indefeasible, the long usurpation of that right by a foreign people and government has not extinguished, nor can it ever be extinguished, except by the destruction of the Irish people. If Mulcahy adheres to the proclamation, it is only by the destruction of the Irish people that the Irish Republican Brotherhood can be dissolved. And there it is in black and white for you. And that lie that I'm told is going on Google and everything else. And if you go down further, we place the cause of the Irish Republic here. There's Irish Republic that Mr. De Valera left out of the 37th Constitution. The Irish Republic, under the protection of the Most High God, whose blessings we invoke upon our arms, and we pray that no one who serves that cause will it dishonor it by cowardice, inhumanity, or rapine.
Okay, well, Nina Naharan is after typing something interesting there on the chat box. Robert Balla, he's the artist, yeah? And James Connolly Heron, who's the great-grandson of James Connolly, apparently drafted this new, inverted commas, proclamation with no mention of Republic in it.
Oh, that's treason.
And no mention of the Irish Republican Brotherhood at all.
That's treason for anyone. It tells you quite here, if they appeared in the Oglin Heron Court with that document, the Oglin Heron Court has to find them, that's treason. Because if you read here, and I've just read you, that we place the cause of the Irish Republic under the protection of the Most High God, whose blessings we invoke on our arms, and we pray that no one who serves that cause would dishonor it by cowardice, inhumanity, or rapine. And look, if you will go up to the top of that page, that we declare the right of the people of Ireland to the ownership of Ireland and to the unfettered control of Irish destiny to be sovereign and indefeasible. Nobody can change that. And for those even to admit that document, that is treason. And the Oglin na hÉireann Court is what deals with the 1916 proclamation and the sovereign constitution. They only deal with sovereign. And that's treason for anybody to do that. Or even to, you know, you read the proclamation. If you're ever in doubt of something or other, license or anything else.
Well, I have that mounted on the wall here in front of me, Billy, for a very good reason. One, it's incredibly well written.
It is.
The amount of concepts encapsulated in that document to be honest, I think it's one of the most well-written documents ever produced. Ever. I mean, by mankind. I don't just mean by an Irish man or a group of Irish men. I mean, by mankind.
You talked about solutions to problems, yes. And you're always, and that's why I always love.
Well, that's the source of all the problems and the remedies, solutions. All the solutions required are encapsulated in that document.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, there you talked about, I didn't know who wrote this. I only heard about there was a new proclamation to be written. That's treason. And no question about it is treason. You could maybe make a case for the sovereign constitution being updated and amended, which it needs to be done. But for anyone, look, even on that document, I can't even put a comma or a full stop into that document.
No.
That is treason for me. Or the only thing that can be put.
Well, that's going to bring forth another thing, Billy, because, I mean, I know, as you well know, there have been your detractors, etc., out there attempting clearly attempting to pull every trick in the book to get people to not look at the information and not listen to what you're saying and not look at the concepts that are being discussed even here on PIR in relation to all of this. And they keep trying to use this idea that, oh, somehow Billy Maguire is telling a lie. And I've actually said this many times, that you actually can't lie in relation to anything you say to do with any of this, can you?
Well, the reason why, and in the oldest families before my time, and I don't know where it is at the moment, there is a torque, you know, a gold sort of you wear around your neck.
It used to be the collar of Moran.
And when that proclamation was read, and in the mansion house, that was worn. And if you wear that, you tell truth and knowledge and information. And that, if you don't do it, that is what hangs you or chokes you.
Yeah, it means your life, effectively. It means your life is gone. That's it. You'll be hung.
That's the old thing. I don't do it now because, as you know, we had awful difficulties in the mansion house because when I was, you know, my father died in 1964.
Mm-hmm.
And I suddenly had to take over this. And
in fact, maybe, can you just explain to people that, Billy? How old were you in 1964 when you took over?
I was 7 in 1950 when I went, and in 1964, what would that be? But anyway,
well, you were only mid to late 20s.
Something like that. And it was very difficult because you had.
And can you, well, maybe let's just go back a little bit. The first time you went in, the first time did you manage to get in, did they let you in the mansion house the first time when you had to do the seal ceremony?
It was very discreet because, you see, the big problem in those days was that the UVF were going to come down and blow up the mansion house where the stage was ratified by the will of all the people. That was always the threat. And Tomás Magilla, who would have been a cousin of my father's, and he was a Lord Mayor of Dublin. And I used to talk to Tomás.
That's kind of interesting that you say that, because some of your more recent detractors apparently do have connections, as far as I can tell, that reach in that direction, perhaps.
But he couldn't even attend that day. And this is why, when I used to come into the mansion house, the door was just left open, and I used to have to put out that door at 1 o'clock. And for a young person, it was very difficult. And they couldn't say anything because this was a real life threat in those days about the UVF coming down to blow up the mansion house.
Well, I think even was it just a couple of years ago, there was a group apparently who were saying they were going to come down and to attempt to fly a Union Jack over the Oireachtas, Leinster House. And we actually came out online and said, yeah, it's about time they actually, a bit of honesty. At least they'd be flying the correct flag for a change.
These are the difficulties, you know, we have. But that was the real difficulty in those days.
Mm.
And it was always hush up. You know, there isn't even a plaque up in the mansion house.
Nope.
To say that this is where the sovereign Republic of Erin.
No, and if you look around Ireland, there's plaques on the wall where a poet used to scratch himself. There'll be a plaque.
Yeah.
And where the state was founded. Nothing.
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 And why is that? Well, people should ask, why is that? Why is that? And to see the cut of Billy, you saw it up there at the teachers' club the other day. This graceful condition of Vaughan's Hotel.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like a derelict building.
Well, I think, I mean, even people should be asking themselves, what's the source of sovereignty for the Crown? What's their source of sovereignty, Billy? What are they claiming?
Exactly. And as you know, that's, as we have explained it time and time again, it is the hop that is the sovereign, not the crown. The crown is royalty. And royalty is pomp and ceremony, which they are brilliant at. But that's not sovereignty. Sovereignty are the people. Your intellect, your reason, your being, how you live, you know, that's what sovereignty is.
Yep.
But I think it's time people really started asking questions of their politicians. And we're going to ask Dublin City Council. I mean, that was a disgrace the day Harry and I were down there to attend that.
Well, this is why we need, it's the people that have to do this, Billy. It's
oh, yeah.
The listener. Whoever's listening right now, whether you're listening to the podcast or whether you're listening live, this is up to you guys. It's not up to Billy. Billy's already been doing it. He's been doing it for...
Well, Billy's gone too.
How many years now, Billy? 40 what years?
What?
How many years have you been doing this now? This?
It was 50 last year.
50, pardon me. 50 last year. Yes, sorry.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, you've always been doing it effectively for the last 50 odd years.
It's because I was with my father, you see, and I was with all those people. I used to go to...
Mm. But that's what I'm saying. It's up to whoever's listening to this right now. It's up to you. I mean, you can choose to do it or you can choose to not do it. But if you choose to not do it, you're the one who's going to have to look into your children's eyes in the future and say, well, I didn't do anything about that.
But if you have, look at the benefits you have. You have a passport. You can travel any place in the world that's recognized. And it's a very strange situation that the provincial government don't recognize the state. Either does Michael D. Higgins. He doesn't recognize the state. He doesn't recognize the constitution. And I had murder with him over his inaugural speech that time when he said that the sovereign constitution, he didn't even refer to it. He said the constitution, I think, was 75 years.
Well, I'm going to bring this up again, Billy, because I think it's essential people understand this, that there was a stage you had a conversation with Michael D. Higgins with regard to sovereignty, and he said something very direct and crude to you in relation to it.
And that was right. I was shocked at that. That was in Galway. I met him in his office. I think the Ashton Hotel.
And was there anybody present, or was it just you and him?
Well, he had his clinic there is where he had it. There were plenty of people.
And I know it's a bit crude, but maybe perhaps would you mind repeating exactly what it was he said to you?
The effing sovereignty.
Sorry, I didn't hear it. Say again?
The effing sovereignty. But he didn't use, he used the expression, you know?
The F-U-C-K.
Yeah. And I thought that was a disgrace. And, I mean, he was one of the ones who was behind the gutting of Horn's Hotel. And he doesn't recognize the Irish Republican Brotherhood. As you know, I mean, he treats me with absolute contempt and evil because, as you know, he...
Well, I mean, I was always wondering why the people of Ireland weren't up in arms when they realized that even under the 1937 constitution, as weak as it may be and as watered down as it may well be, but in there, clearly, the oath to become the president in that regard, diminished or otherwise, requires that he swore his oath in the presence of Almighty God. And then, of course, we found out himself and Eamon Gilmore had already professed that they were agnostic. So it begs the question, can he be even remotely considered to be in the office he's claiming he is in, even now? And I don't think it's possible.
But he gave the two fingers, and he's given the two fingers again to the sovereign citizens. I mean, there was a huge protest there about water. The citizens own the water. And yet he signed it into law. He didn't care.
No, he doesn't care. No, and I think the people are realizing that he can stand there and he can say his softly, softly speeches and cajole and plumoss and all of that jazz. Hmm. But never mind what he says, folks. Look at what he does.
Yeah, that's exactly. And all this whole thing about going off telling people, you know, about their rights and the constitution. And yet every farmer I know from because he was...
Sure, he's not even in a constitutional position. He can't, Harry and myself were here one day. And Harry, as you know, we said, okay, let's ring and ask. And we asked him. And the guy on the other end of the phone, he was really struggling because he knew damn well what Harry was putting to him.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to respond, essentially. And he was doing his best not to. But he was struggling because he realized, you can nearly hear the wheels turning in his head thinking, this guy has a point. If he doesn't believe in God, how can he be the president? Because it's a constitutional requirement, as I said, even under the weakened version of the 1937 Bunreacht na hÉireann, that it's an essential element. I mean, even the Crown, she had to do her deal was under God, so help me.
Yes, and the point I'm saying to you is that, I mean, the way he treats me is really as president of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, and I mean, he really gets back at me because he was the provisional minister for arts, heritage and the Gaeltacht at the time, and he deliberately singled out all my land in Connemara, and he designated it ASI, NHA and SAC, and he 100% destocked my land, and I can't plant a tree or cut a sod of turf or keep an animal on my land.
Yeah, essentially it was they went to war against, I mean, people have always, they went to war against you, Billy. I mean, people have always asked me, you know, but Vin, you know, if Billy's position, he's okay in his life, etc., and he doesn't necessarily need anything, why is he doing all this? And, you know, I mean, between me and you, Billy, I mean, to me it's always been, you know, plainly obvious why you're doing it. One, I think it's because you're one of the most genuine people I think I've ever met. I mean, I consider you a friend, along with everything else, you know, but
I do, the people are sovereign. And yeah. When I think of, you know, the Irish Republican Brotherhood and the Fenian Brotherhood, the sister organization in America, and, you know, they went out and the suffering that our people have had over the years, unnecessary, and to see the suffering that was on in Northern Ireland when it was unnecessary.
Well, I think the point I'm trying to make here is that I want people to realize that if you had chosen Billy 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago, oh, here, I've had enough of all this, so I'm not bothering with any of this anymore. A, nobody would have, well, there was very few people around who understood, I suppose. Nobody would have berated you as such. And you could have, in theory, just lived your life in peace and harmony, and you didn't really, you'd have been, you, Billy Maguire would have been fine, right?
You're telling me that I'm mad to be doing it, and I say, I agree with you, but anyway.
But I'm just trying to get that across, that there's been great personal cost to you.
And it has, I know, and my family.
Well, I think people need to acknowledge, and I think to acknowledge, they need to understand that, and they need to know about it.
I mean, £1 million in 1970.
I have to say, Billy, I would have struggled. I can be honest with you. I would have struggled in that position.
Well, it was a very difficult one, and this was very difficult. Sure, you know James McGrath, chairman of Friends of Irish Freedom in America. You know, all that money he collected, and that was all in good faith by Americans. And to find out that it was all robbed, that row was still going on in America. That money was the Irish Republican Brotherhood. For all the institutions of the state to set up.
Well, we would have
a proper water system. We would have proper.
Of course we would.
And hospitals.
We'd have the best water. We do have the best water probably on the planet, but we'd have it in our kitchens and without all the nasty chemicals.
And hospitals would be run and, properly run.
Yeah.
And that.
Hospitals would be providing proper herbs, remedies and all available cures to assist and.
And corporations would all have licenses. And they would be held under control here by the citizens.
There's a question coming in here from Derek again. Is the IRB still in situ, i.e. active? I don't know what he means by active, but
yes.
Open HQ still secret
It was never secret, or it was only secret to the British.
Yes.
And the Crown Forces.
So the question is it still in situ? It's never not been in situ. It was never disbanded. That was incorrect. And in fact, it was never actually...
Well, we explained about Mulcahy. He couldn't, because it says...
He wasn't in the position to do so, no, correct.
Only by the destruction of the Irish people can the IRB be destructed.
Right, so then it's i.e. active. Well, active as in, well, as, yes, it's Billy is active. But active in what sense, Derek?
We are here.
The IRB is a peaceful organisation.
The usurpation of that right by foreign people and government has not extinguished the right. Nor can it ever be extinguished except by the destruction of the Irish people. I think that's very clear. And Mulcahy, I mean, he never said that. This is propaganda from Fine Gael, because they know that money that they got from Judge Cohen and all that in America, that was for the Irish Republican.
Well, I'd like everybody to do some research on that court case, folks.
I would too.
And I've been doing some.
That's why that was done at the time.
Yeah, if you look at that, you'll see, sorry, I'm talking to the listener here again. So if you look at that, you'll see that, they realized, well, we've a big pile of money here.
I mean, it was 7 million, Vincent. How many million?
That was, yeah, it was, and back in the day, I mean, that was equivalent to billions.
Billions, yeah.
And they used, what was the phraseology they used, something like, a couple of dollars collected from waitresses or something
trying to
diminish it. But this was equivalent to billions.
Sold bits of land and everything, you know,
yeah.
For bonds and all sorts of things, you know.
And what they did was they effectively said, well, look, this new free state that's in, that apparently exists, well, the Irish people have sort of acquiesced to it in a manner, so to speak. So what we'll do is we'll make a determination that the money can go that way. Essentially, that's what they did. And that, it was a deception and it was theft. There's no other word for
and
it. It was theft.
It was the United States colluding with the British and that money was collected for the Irish Republican Brotherhood for all those orgs. If we had that money today, you wouldn't have to pay any water charges. You wouldn't have to pay. I mean, there must be some benefits of living, of being a sovereign citizen, living in the sovereign republic there. And, you know, it's time people stood up and got the facts. If you haven't got the facts, you can't make a valid, you know, assessment.
Well, you can't even begin to think about a subject or a topic unless you're understanding the, as you say, the facts as to, you know, what transpired, how it's there, how it existed, what was the idea, notion and intention behind it. I mean, you know, I was looking at the, propaganda piece that was, but that took somebody worked on a propaganda piece against what you were saying, Billy, and they tried to chuck in PIR for good measure. And it took them 6 months apparently to make this. And I mean, it's very well made. But it's clear, I mean, it's clearly a hit piece. But they took, and I said to myself, well, who would invest 6 months, who would dedicate themselves to a project for 6 months, and night and day probably, to produce this? And, of course, then they wouldn't put it up on their own Facebook pages, etc. So they were trying to produce it and yet not claim to be the creators of it at the same time. And I mean, you know, clearly that's a technique that somebody's using, and these are specifically, you know, these techniques are designed specifically by, historically by certain agencies, if you will, I'm picking my words carefully here, to disrupt, confound and confuse.
And these are very clever people.
Well, in this case, apparently they're not so clever. I had a look at the view count, and maybe they don't know this, but if you go to YouTube, folks, and if you click underneath the video and you click more, you can actually see the data collected for the people who viewed the video, when they viewed it, how long they viewed it, and apparently most people have only viewed the video they made. That after all that effort, most viewers turned it off less than 15 minutes into it, and I think it's an hour and 10 or 15 minutes long. So apparently most of their viewers didn't really care too much for it.
But Vincent, well, something you should ask your viewers there, or your listeners, to, is that what is Leinster House, the Royal Dáil and Senator Rochtas, what are they going to do next Wednesday? Are they going to have any commemoration? Are they going to do anything?
Nothing, they'll do nothing.
You do ignore it.
They'll do nothing.
Nothing. Isn't that like, so?
Well, here's one. Well, okay, well then I'll put this out there. Well, all listeners, how about on that day, on the 21st of January, maybe if you're intending, your intention is to head in to accept and acknowledge your sovereignty, along with the sovereignty of everyone else, because that's what that sovereign seal ceremony is about. It's not just about accepting the sovereign Republic of Éire, it's also about accepting your own sovereignty and the sovereignty of every other individual on the planet, not even just Ireland, it's on the planet, Billy.
The whole time, that's exactly it.
And what I'm going to suggest is, why don't you ring those in, make a phone call to Leinster House and say, Happy Independence Day. Ring a few people that you know, tell them, hey, Happy Independence Day.
Would that happen in any other state? I suppose it would, I don't know.
Well.
But it's not right. And then they'll come out in 2016 and they want Michael D. Higgins to read our proclamation. Thank God he's not going to read our proclamation.
I know they've said that. I can't see that happening, Billy.
And
I can't see him doing that, no way.
It's not, people are not, they're not being genuine. Or, you know, if people who are genuine than that, you know, mind. But they couldn't care less. They want to be in that position, traveling around the world, pretending, lying and deception, propaganda. And I think I don't live like that. And I'd hope that citizens, sovereign citizens, don't want to live like that either. You know, just doing it for the money, or for whatever reason.
Well, I mean, I think that's, wasn't that the real kind of, idea that, you know, that the Judas string, the implication is that whatever Judas did, he did it for his 30 pieces of silver.
Yes. Well, Hanson used to always say to me, I'd be on about the harps and the sovereign seals and the sovereignty of that. And Hanson would, excuse me, he'd lean over and he'd say, Billy, it's always about money. And how right he was. It's all about money.
Well, you see, I think that's our strength here, Billy, because at the moment, you see, the people here are realizing that the monetary system that's in operation in Ireland and Europe and the world, it's collapsing. And it's collapsing because of the exponential function known as usury within the system. It's going to collapse upon itself because of that. And we're starting to see the effects of that. Did you know, Billy, would you believe me if I told you that the papers in Ireland are reporting that there are 45,000 families potentially 2 years behind in their mortgage payments.
Yeah.
That's an incredible figure. Absolutely
that's
incredible.
All about the people who have a home and that have even De Valera with his home.
As in incredibly bad. That's, I mean, in one sense. But at the same time, it's, I was talking about this today about the meetup, that the people who haven't been paying their mortgages, in one sense, they've actually done us a favour because it means that instead of that money going to a bank and evaporating out of the country, it's actually still in circulation. Because that's what we actually require right now. We actually need to keep whatever currency is in circulation right now, keep it in circulation, folks. I can't say don't give the money to a bank, folks, but I really, you know, as on a personal level, I do wish people would stop doing that. I see no reason why any Irish man or woman right now should be giving their hard-earned currency that they can use to exchange with each other at the moment. I don't see any reason, not one good reason, to give it to a Crown-controlled bank, because every single bank that's operating on this land right now is either a Crown-controlled bank or a bank from a different jurisdiction. There is not one single Irish bank. Sure, there's not, Billy. Not one.
Not one. I mean, they're not one, and they don't even have a license. And they can do what they like. The nod and the wink can be all right.
What I say to people is, accept whatever roof is over your head right now, that's your roof.
That is your roof. And it's important when you read all those documents we've been talking about, it's all about you're the sovereign.
Exactly. And I mean, if the people of Ireland own Ireland, Billy, who are they buying it off?
That's the point of the thing.
So I say, whatever roof is over your head right now, that's your roof and you own it.
And you're the sovereign.
And accept it.
Sports or anybody else, you should stand up. And just, you should say to these people, where's your license? Where is your license?
Yeah, and if somebody tries to take you from under that roof, call your fellow countrymen.
That's it.
Seek their assistance. Just like, I mean, those chaps from the new revived Land League, they call themselves, the new Land League guys. Call them. And if they don't come to your assistance, I've even said, call the Defence Forces.
If the Defence Forces
won't come to defend the people, what use are they? Say, well, if you're not coming to defend me, take your uniform off. Hang your gun up. If the Irish Defence Forces are not here to defend the Irish people from being evicted from their dwellings, what good are they, Billy?
I don't know.
Oh, they're off in the Congo doing X, Y, and Z, or they're off here, there, and everywhere keeping the peace, apparently, in other nations.
That's not what they were set up for.
No. What use are they? If they're not going to defend us here, sure, what use are they?
And they're not an army. They're a defence force. They defend
exactly.
You. That's what they are. And your home, and the assets of the state. That's what they were set up for. You know? But what I would like, and I'm saying it again tonight, you know, as you know, we gave Willibank to the University of Limerick. And as you know, we talked about the university before. That's something Vincent, you and I have to do this year and go down and walk up that. But it was an Irish Republican Brotherhood University for Limerick, Clare and Tipperary. I've said it many times. And the other side of the river is Clare, Tipperary, and down the road. But all the contents of, have you that picture of Willibank there?
I do, but I don't have it on the site yet.
All right. But Willibank was a lovely old place. That's where the Supreme Council of the Irish Republican Brotherhood used to meet after Vaughan's death.
Yeah.
That'll be after 1932 is when my grand-aunt died. And then they sort of moved around again. And I think around the 40s they moved to Willibank. And my father bought it, and he wasn't able to keep running up to Dublin and all over the place. And Willibank was a fine old house, and that's where the Supreme Council used to meet, and including, coming to Mar, leaning the hair, and all the air dogs come in and sit around there. And I've got some lovely photographs of that place, which I'm going to try and put up. So all the Vaughan's Hotel papers were brought to Limerick, and they were in the old offices down in Arcus Quay, Francis Street. And over the office was both known as where the grain sacks were kept, you know, and that's where they were repaired at that. But there was such a collection of them. There were all these boxes up there as well. There were boxes down the back offices on the people. They were kept in various places, and the memorabilia could be the target of the press, you know, on one of the bicycles that, you know, they used to cycle around Dublin because we were inconspicuous as on a bicycle, and they were all kept by Christy Hart, who was the hall porter in Vaughan. And actually, that bicycle that came to Willibank when my father was a young man, in those days, of course, petrol was very scarce and rationed. So he used to stay at Vaughan's Hotel when he was a young man, probably his 20s, but I don't know what age. But he actually cycled that bicycle back from Dublin to Limerick. Thing you do when you were young.
He cycled it from Dublin to where?
Huh?
Sorry, he said he cycled it from Dublin to?
He cycled from Vaughan's Hotel back to Limerick. He used to,
wow. That's a hell of a cycle.
Huh?
That's a hell of a cycle.
But I don't think so, Vincent, because I used to know old people and that. You know, going to Curtis to the match, and they'd come from all Limerick of Fame, they'd come to the four corners of Limerick to cycle to Curtis, and you'd hear about people cycling to Dublin back in those days. And should they had bicycles, they had wheels and that. But anyway, that bicycle was there, that was part of the memorabilia, that's why I mentioned that. And all those guns, including the gun. You have a photograph of Tom Clark on Sarsfield Bridge at, you know, and
yep.
He's beckoning to the citizens to read the proclamation, that's your sovereignty. But we actually have that gun. Tom Clark's son, Tom Jr., he gave that to my father. He sculptured it. And that was all. They were all. But the point I'm saying to you is that there were two valleys in that roof in Willibank and up in the attic. And the carpenter, there was a carpenter which used to do the business as well as Willibank, you know, and he was really known. And he converted all the, underneath that, the roofs and the valleys, where all those boxes were put up, and a lot of the memorabilia
one ball from the siege of Limerick that my father gave to Ted Kennedy on, and that's a replica of the treaty stone. And they were, you know, they were appreciated that because, as you know, Honeyfits was from, they were from Brough, and I told you at the time when my father brought them over here first to get involved in Northern Ireland. And when he came, President Kennedy, he wanted to go to out to Brough, but Brough is very close to Bree, and no way would De Valera allow the word of press to go out to Bree, because that was a landlord's cottage that we lived in. You were in that cottage.
And absolutely. Billy, can I just interrupt you for a moment? I just need to take a quick break, if you understand me.
Right.
So I'm just going to put on a little quick song for everybody.
Please.
And we'll be back to you just after this, folks. Okay, we're live back now. Sorry about that, folks. I had to take an emergency break. So Billy is still with me here. Where were we? There was a couple of questions coming in, Billy, which I think, you know, again, I appreciate all the guys sending in questions. I'm getting lots of questions coming over Skype and from the chat box and private messages. I'm just not going to get to all of them.
We've nothing to hide.
No, I know. I'm going to try to get to as many as possible. So there's some people asking, essentially, can they join the IRB? What I'd say to them is, well, I don't know. Can you?
But you have to live as a sovereign.
Exactly.
You have
can
to uphold the constitution, the sovereign and the proclamation. If you're going to just do it for your own or some evil.
Yeah, it's not like something to just say, I'm some member of the IRB. It's not about that.
No.
It's about, can you live your life that way? I mean, are you ready? Ask yourself the question, I suppose, folks. Are you ready to live that way?
You want to be.
Are you prepared?
Yeah. But if you are, you can, of course, because it's your sovereignty. And if you have a passport from the United System, that's our passport, you know. Mm-hmm. Where would you go without the driving license and everything? You know, you can, of course. But the point is, there's another side to it. You have to live. Sovereigns don't behave. You know, it's a lovely code of life.
Yeah, but I mean, the whole point of it is that you're not supposed to capitulate to a foreign ruler. You're not supposed to capitulate to a ruler. That's the whole point. You're supposed to be who you are. You're supposed to live in peace and harmony with your fellow man.
That's exactly the point.
You're not supposed to oppress anyone.
You
see, I think something unique is happening, Billy. I think that it is changing, and it's changing in a way that It's accelerating, you see, that the awareness that people are gathering amongst themselves now is incredible. I mean, there's groups and guys and gals meeting all over Ireland now, and they're exploring these ideas, they're talking about it, they're examining it, and they're really starting to see that, you know what, existence on planet Earth, whatever way you perceive it to be, but how could anybody come here and be predetermined or predestined to be your master? And most people, when they think about that alone, they think, yeah, no, I didn't come here to be somebody's subject. I didn't come here to have a master. I came here to be free and sovereign and interact with others in a free, open and friendly manner. That's why we're here.
And it's achievable.
Of course it's achievable.
Point. You can do it and you can achieve it.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at all the aspirational movies that come out, folks, I mean, even just look at Hollywood alone and the aspirational movies that are, usually they tend to be science fiction movies where they put the idea somewhere. They say, well, we'll take this idea and we'll just shove it into the future somewhere, as if we won't exactly say how we all got to here as a human species, but we got there eventually. Even the likes of, say, Star Trek, Billy, where they, you know, Gene Roddenberry's original Star Trek series, they didn't use or ever mentioned the use of money on the spaceship, and there was multiple ethnicities, etc., etc., and they all just got on with what they got on with. And they put out little things every now and again, like, well, you know, when we abolished money, or when we got over all of that. And, you see, the idea of Star Trek was that once we get over all of these things, we can literally excel and, you know, reach for the stars. But we have to overcome all these things first, and we are, in many regards, so close to overcoming all these things, and in other regards,
we are so far from technology. And, you know, we can do it now.
Yeah, you see, the technology we have, Billy, I mean, you know, we've had this conversation.
Be careful how you use it.
Absolutely. This is where responsibility comes in. That, I mean, we've talked about the string, that, you know, that the string is mankind's greatest tool, I suppose. It's not the wheel. People say, though, the wheel is the greatest invention of mankind. But it's not our greatest tool. Our greatest tool is the string. The golden thread,
and
if you will.
And the home stick.
Yeah.
That's what it's all from.
Yeah.
And that's what I was doing in Connemara at that time, and I couldn't do it because Michael D. Higgins, he designated all my land, and it would have been wonderful, I think, too.
Well, when I was down with you in at Loch Gur, with Andrew, I mean, I don't know exactly how, but I mean, I've always been a student of maths and geometry and all of these things. Right. I've always enjoyed them. So as you were talking and explaining and doing what you're doing, I mean, I was working out other things in my head, and I was realizing that this expands into everything. It's every device we make, all what mankind calls technology. Most technology has very simple ideas behind it. You know, and we add all these simple ideas together, and we end up with complex structures: computers, radios, televisions, cars, etc., etc. But essentially, they all boil down to our ability, our first ability as a creature, to take something from nature, something from around us, and to, as you say, the ohm stick, the string, the bow. It was an ability to use our intellect in a manner that no other creature on the planet seemed to be able to do. Even though there are other creatures out there, they use sticks to, you know, fish out, termites from anthills, termite hills and all of that, and to feed themselves. But they never took it, no other creature took it to the level that we did. They didn't have the capacity.
About that, in Loch Gur this year, they had a sort of an open day in the autumn, and the sun was just, you know, in that time. And you know the Rannachan Dove stone, the biggest stone there. And then the clock and clashing, the harp stone beside it. And the sun was in a perfect position. And there was quite a few people there I was talking to about it. And you had Noreen. And of course, I had the two harps. And of course, no one really, you know, would understand the clock and clashing, the significance of it. But I took the two harps that I have. And I stood back from the Ronak Grand Dove. And the sun was just in the right position. And to see the symbol, and people just didn't understand what it meant. That was the first time that mankind learned how to portray or project an object onto another surface. I mean, that's the start of cinema, of your mobile phone, television.
Everything, all audio-visual media, if you will. Yes,
and
absolutely.
There it is there on that Rannachan Dove stone on that particular day at that time when the sun was behind you in that position. And you know, a child can understand that, but the grown-up people there couldn't understand it.
That's always the way. Children understand things instinctively like that, and it's the adults we have trouble with. I mean, but in fairness, Billy, I had trouble with a lot of this stuff too. I mean, you know, eventually I got to understand just from my studies, etc. But I don't know if you want to put this out there, but when you were explaining to me about the methodology to enter a stone circle, do you want to maybe talk about that a little?
Well, that's important too, because you know, the whole purpose of, we'll say we take Loch Gur, for instance, or take any of these places. You know, our ancestors, they knew what they were doing. And you come in the daylight, you go clockwise, and at night, it's anti-clockwise. And if you go to Loch Gur, you know, you see the stone, and you see that. Well, and as you know, if you take your two fingers, you know the way to the sovereign?
Yep.
The symbol, Tutankhamun, the harp sign.
Yeah, the two fingers inverted.
Your left hand to face the sun, and then on your right hand. It's the moon ship, the harp sign, and the sovereign seal on your left. And you put your two fingers up, and your third finger and your thumb. That's the word. And then you take your right hand, and you put the top finger over that. You say it looks like a V. That makes it into a triangle.
Mm-hmm.
And the other finger goes down. That's the sun box and the sound box. And that's your you know, how mankind level. That's your level.
So it's a representation, which literally we were, that's a man or a woman doing this is making a representation of the combined knowledge of mankind, essentially.
That is the point.
And this is why you see all these other people out there who are attempting to, you know, talk down about what you're saying. They're missing the point that without this,
without all that information.
Well, exactly. What I'm saying is that this is not the Freemasons. Information, folks. This is your information. You cannot survive on this planet without this knowledge. And they're keeping it from you, and therefore you're having to go to them to survive. Once you don't have to go to them, you can survive yourself and thrive. And you don't need them, and they don't want that. The Crown doesn't want that, Billy, because they want everybody to be subject to them. And we don't want anybody to be subject to anybody. I mean, essentially, that is the message of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, isn't it? You are not here to be a subject to another.
or you're not to be a slave.
That's no slavery, yes.
You cannot be, somebody asked, can I be a member of the Irish? You can. But you can't be a slave to be a member of the Irish Republic Brotherhood. And
no, because if you enter into slavery, you're abandoning your sovereignty.
That's exactly the point. And you, you know, and as you know, in the courts and that, you're giving them permission and you know, when you come before the court, you're actually giving them permission to hear your case, and you have to abide by the judge what he says. What's that? I don't know.
Yeah, you have to lower yourself. You literally have to lower yourself, not just physically, but spiritually, if you will.
And you get these everyone nodding and winking, and you know, there's money here and we'll rob it. You know, horrible. But I mean, we have it, and we have. And when you go into some places like these, you know, Lochgar or Tara or these places. Not just go in and not know every little part of it and why it's there, what the sun is doing and how it's, you know, the sunship is growing all the biomass. The moonship controls all the cycle of life and all the tides.
Well, you see, this was another thing. These guys were trying to suggest that, when Billy McGuire talks about the sun, he's talking about sun cult worship. And I'm saying, no. If you don't understand what the sun is doing in the sky, sure, how are you to grow a crop?
Well, you can't.
How are you to rear animals?
You can't. And that's what our ancestors. And that's what I'm passing on, that knowledge and information. And you look at the curved side of the hop, and you see everything grows up on the 21st of January as high as that curved side. And that curved side then goes down at the 21st of January, just its lowest point. And that's for measuring the circumference of the sun, the moon, and the planet Earth. I mean, the sun box, the sound box.
Well, this is it. I mean, if you don't understand what the sun and moon, etc. are doing, how are you, and the seasons, how are you to know when you're supposed to plant? And how are you supposed to know when is the best time to plant, the best time to harvest?
If you can't do that, mankind isn't he hungry?
Sure, we're doomed if we can't do that.
Well, doomed. And I mean, every child, I believe, should know how to do that. Whereas today we have a different system.
That's the key right there, Billy. Teach the children, folks.
Yeah.
That's the most strongest message I can put out there is teach your children.
Exactly. Even though you need to grow a few spuds.
Grow something. I mean, I've said to people, get your circles. I call these circles. I say, get your circles, get your life cycles in place. Initially, get your clean water supply sorted.
Yeah.
Get independent with a water supply even. Then even if you grow just one food crop, just one, even a tomato plant in a plant pot if you're in an apartment, you now have a second circle.
And you're in touch with nature. That's what you're doing. You're doing it. And planet Earth. And you're sovereign. And that's what you're compliant with you know, how to do that. And that's what
after I came back here, after being down with you, Billy, we did that. And, I mean, it took me a while to grow them, but I got them grown. And, you know, when I had something that I thought, well, I've planted this, I've nurtured it, and here it is now, producing for me. And it's an incredible feeling. I think, right, that's a cycle, that's a circle, that's another.
And Vincent, that could be lost in two generations to say all that knowledge and information.
Yeah.
And is that what sustained us?
Absolutely. I mean, we have people that come on here, Clive the Carl and all, loads of other people who are on the radio here, and they keep talking to us about health. And almost every time they're talking about health, they're talking about plant life in relation to your health. That, you know, almost all the remedies for what may ail you, generally, they're growing around you.
Everything is there, but we don't seem to see it, or we don't seem to realize it. I don't know what's wrong with us. You know, it was, and I don't know why we're...
Well, as you say, a couple of generations of abuse, essentially, you know, systematic abuse by a control system, and we lost so much, Billy. But no matter what we lost, we can regain.
That's the point. And all of us regain it. But all you have to know is how to go about it and to, you know, understand it. And that's what it is. That's what you give out in your program, teach people. And that's what's so nice about the whole thing, you know?
Well, it's such... It's such I think sometimes, Billy, it sounds so simple to people and they go, yeah, but like, what's the answer for this? What's the answer for that? What's the answer for the other? And I say, well, you missed the answer. Go back again. Come back, you know.
Ask a child.
Grow, yeah.
Tell you.
Every time. It's as simple as this, folks. If you have a patch of land.
But you don't get even growing. Need it now. You know these new boxes that they have.
Absolutely. Stuff. If you're in an apartment six stories up, grow something.
And you can grow. It's amazing what you can grow. And to me, and you can, if you look at that photograph of Willibank, you know, there was a huge conservatory there behind the house.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a greenhouse there as well. And that greenhouse was had a hotbed system.
Oh yeah, explain the hotbeds.
Well, the hotbed system was a wonderful system in those days. Well, they used to use what they used to call, you know, when they mucked out the
to the beds and laid the earth on top of that. And when we went to Willowbank first, you know, when my father was the one who restored Willowbank and that, and there were great gardeners that were there before us, and I used to know the old gardener that worked there for years, his name was Domara, and he had a nursery down in the cottage. But they used to grow pineapples and black and white grapes and the black.
Now, this is in Ireland. I mean, people need to realize this is in Ireland, pineapples. Ireland.
This is probably what, the early 19th century, they were growing pineapples, they were growing everything under the sun, all the fruit and vegetables were all grown there in the garden, and it was in the hotbeds system. And I remember Omar telling me the old gardener that used to be there, and the vine actually in Willowbank was a cutting from the vine in Hampton Court. It was Black Hamburg was the name of the vine.
Mm.
And that was a great thing in those days. Of course, the people who before us were very much ascendancy people, you know.
Okay.
Great gardeners. It was all self-sufficiency. And it was interesting.
Well, absolutely. Even the ascendancy people, Billy, as you say, they still kept this knowledge maintained it.
Once you lose that knowledge, you're in trouble. That's what all I'm saying to you, and that's what we're saying tonight. Don't just go out to Loch Garda's place. Find out what those stones are. When you see that B sign, what it means, what it meant to Tutankhamun. He built the pyramids.
And what you can use it for.
12 months calendar. That's where it comes from. How you do it. How you build, how you construct the building for yourself. You know? And that's what's important. That's all we're telling people. But, going back to Willowbank and the gardens and that. And Willowbank was a self-sufficient place. It had a farm as well. But the garden was absolutely extraordinary. How they used to have all these crops coming in. And that hotbed system, they'd all be, at the end of the year, they'd all be, tomatoes would be grown and then something else would be. But the way they were able to do it was unbelievable. And, in those days, I mean.
Well, it's funny, I mean, the idea of a farm, Billy, I mean, if you say to people, the word farm, people now don't have the same idea or notion about the word farming compared to what they used to have. Farming used to be somewhere that if you went to a farm, they would effectively be a self-sufficient unit.
They used to say, Irish farmers were they were self-sufficient in everything except for tea and sugar. That's the only thing they used to buy, tea and sugar.
And eventually the Irish even got the sugar going. And of course, well, they sold that off, of course.
Mickey Joe Costler was brilliant. Well, of course, Mickey Joe Costler would have learned a lot of that from my granduncle James Shabbat, who's teaching all those people at the time about the industries and ESB and all that.
In fact, that's actually something I'm going to do. I'm going to start a Bring Back Sugar to Ireland campaign on Facebook.
And I wouldn't mind, but Seed Savers, luckily enough, have kept all the seeds that the sugar company had. So
Oh, brilliant. Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, they have Seed Savers up in Scarra, have all the seeds. They
kept that's fantastic.
They got a lot of them at that time. And Seamus O'Sullivan, you know Seamus,
mm-hmm.
he actually worked, he was the accountant for the sugar company.
Ah, okay.
And they have all the containers and everything, they've kept all the, and that could be put back together again, you know. They're great that they kept them, you know. I'm very keen on Seed Savers. I collect a lot of apples. There's 200 varieties of Irish apples and pears and that. We went around to all the old places. Palatines, of course, they brought in, you know, the drill system. Up to then, it was the ridge system, you know, the spade. But they designed the because they were, that's what they were finers from Germany, is what they were. And of course, they were.
Well, do you know something? Over the last while, I've heard an awful lot of extraordinarily positive things about the way the German people themselves have been farming in relation to what's known as biodynamic farming. I mean, I actually know a biodynamic farmer in Cork, and his produce is spectacular. He gave me some meat that you'd climb out of your grave to get it.
Yeah, the flavour.
Oh, it's incredible. It's incredible.
But that's what I am, you know. I was a self-sufficienter, so I mean, I wouldn't be a great farmer. I wouldn't be.
Well, I mean, again, I mean, when I was down with you, Billy, I mean, we were out and we were getting the grand tour, as it were, and, you know, you were able to say to me, oh, this is this apple and that's that, and you used to have an aviary and you've got your vines and, you know, it's a little piece of heaven you have going on down there, really.
Well, I got a bit old now, but the only thing that my big disappointment is that in Connemara, I wanted to plant and restore the Ohm alphabet and the Ohm forest, you know.
Well, that's the thing that I was hoping that Seed Saver people could help us out with, that they could produce.
So they have all the varieties up there now. Been there, Vincent?
No, we interviewed the people from Seed Savers once on the radio. Oh. I'm hoping to get them back on again. But the idea I had at the time was to promote the idea of the Ohm Forest, was that we could maybe get a selection of seeds that we can send off to people, and they can maybe or produce miniatures, like a miniature forest, even, you know, if you have the room to grow the full thing. Brilliant.
They were able to do that, and I must say they have kept all the old varieties of apples and pears.
Well, I was even thinking like the
or, and you know, the Eve's apple and all those apples.
Yeah.
It's like that, that, you know, you, as if you took a bite out of it and the skin grew up. And that was here down in Ballysteen, and you know, old branches of plums, and you know, things that our ancestors planted.
Well, I'm thinking even the likes of, you know, like a bonsai, even a bonsai, you know, the miniature trees that you can take a seed and you can grow and with the correct treatment.
The only fear I have is that apparently if after 2 years you can lose that information and you forgot for maybe generations.
You see, the wonderful thing about what we're doing right now, Billy, is even though I'm recording this and this has gone up as a podcast, I know there are quite a few listeners who are recording everything we say as well as a backup for the backup.
Well, you remember the time they took the, you know, when we got into trouble there that time? I mean, everything was taken down. And, I mean, people should know that information, you know.
Essentially, that's when I found out, you see, because I had a few people call me and say, don't worry, Vin, I have every bloody word you ever said.
Well, that's great for people. I mean, it's their sovereignty. They should push around grandparents. They know everything about the harp and the sovereign seals and that is the tricolor. It's just, we're not, I can't understand the provincial government and the attitude they're taking that they don't go out and promote that to people, the welfare of our people. Sure, only give them the information.
No, all they talk about is jobs, Billy. And I keep saying to people, look, jobs equates, effectively a job is a slave position. It's certainly not the position that, you know, most of the population of an island should have. Maybe perhaps a few people on the island should have jobs, inverted commas, as in working in that manner for another because maybe they lack knowledge. But that the idea would be that if you're working for another, eventually you gain their knowledge. And you thank them for it, and then you go and you set yourself up and become independent. I mean, that's what we're supposed to do for our children. Raise them up to be independent, sovereign, self-sufficient.
It's lovely to see people who are independent. They're not dependent on the state or, you know, other people to bring them down.
I mean, I'm not suggesting for a moment this is easy, and I'm not suggesting for a moment that, you know, you just have to click your fingers and it happens. I mean, I don't know how far away we are from it, but I think we're a lot closer to the beginnings of it, if you will, than we ever thought. I mean, You used to say sometimes, Billy, to me that you know, and I understand you used to maybe not worry as such, but maybe fret a little bit that, is this getting out there?
I did. What I was afraid when I met Harry first, and I met you and Brian and those, and John and those, and Christine and that, all this was gone, and was gone forever, you know?
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
No, and that's why I used to say to you, look, I don't think anybody could put the lid back on this, Billy.
Well, that's what's great.
Because, I mean, I've even said, look,
Genie's,
you know,
out of the bottle and no one can put it back.
Yeah, I mean, I've often said, you know, look, I couldn't even put it back in the box if I tried.
No, but that's what's great about it, you know, that's what makes it all worthwhile, you know. Because I'm pushing on, you know. I would hate to think that what our ancestors, you know.
You're not doing too bad, Billy. I mean, my grandmother was 104 nearly.
Listen, anyway, I suppose we have to go to bed at what? What time do you finish?
Another 15 minutes.
But thank you very much, and all your listeners, for letting us talk about the 21st of January. I'm sorry I have a cold, I have the flu.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You know, how are you feeling these days? I mean, I said to you, get lots of vitamin C into you. Did you do that?
I'm doing what I'm told. John has me on cough bottle, and I must say, I was afraid to see I start coughing, and I wouldn't be able to talk, you know. And I was telling you about our friend Seamus, who's a historian.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a program for that. You didn't get that program, did you?
Oh, the pod. Yeah, I got the pod, yeah.
Of what we did?
The one from Saturday night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
102.
Yeah.
Did you hear it?
No, I didn't hear it. I just downloaded.
Oh, so you were able to do it. Shorter version, but it just shows you the interest. And people are listening to you all the time, you know. You think that there may not be, but they are listening. And that's what's great about you.
Well, it's they're listening. What really is happening is that people are listening to this information, Billy. I mean, okay, I might be saying it sometimes, or you might be saying, but
we can't give them anymore. We're not to give them.
But it's definitely resonating. It's like, do you know what it's like? It's like there's been an old bell hanging on a thing for a long time, and nobody ever bothered picking up the hammer and giving it a strike. And that's what's happened. The bell has been given a strike, and now everybody can hear it.
I mean, unnecessary. I don't think any of that was going on. Bankers and everything else. It wasn't necessary.
Okay, so just before, I know you're getting ready to go, but before you do, so what's the plan of action, as they say, for
24th? That's the one thing I was a bit worried about, because I have been hinted at that they might close off. Is it Dawson Street called the street?
Well, I'd heard that, yeah, well, I mean, and of course, we you know.
But I look forward to the guard of Shikana, whose first day was there, and and I mean, they've always been very good for us.
Well, I mean, I'll put it this way. I mean, it needs to be put out there that if somebody attends, and if somebody or anybody attending even remotely attempts to do something that's undignified, you know, that they have nothing to do with this idea or notion, they couldn't possibly.
Look, I told you, the Irish Republican Brotherhood, we're on the umbrella organization. We're for war, for violence, corruption, maladministration, malnourishment of our people, and you know, propaganda, lies, and deception. We just abhor that. That is not the Irish Republican Brotherhood. Sovereignty.
Openness and honesty.
That's it.
Yep.
And dignified for those members that went out and had their...
acknowledgement, absolutely. Acknowledgement for those who went before us and who were prepared to sacrifice everything if it came to it. And they did in many...
They suffered for us, and we should show some little bit. Yeah. But after the Mansion House, anyway, we go up by the Royal Dáil and Senator Rochtus in Leinster House. And we'll have a few words. We have a lovely piper, I believe, coming again this year. And we go down then to 16 Lumber Street for her. James Stevens founded. We won't go to Trinity because we won't have time. And then we'll come up to GPO with our proclamation. And they're always very courteous to us. And then we'll go to the Garden of Remembrance. But they closed that, I think, at 4 o'clock. So it's always a bit good.
Yeah.
I must say, I don't know where...
Well, look, I mean, here's what I'd like to say. That look, I'm hoping everybody and his wife, as they say, attends.
Yeah.
And, you know, if... We don't really know what they're going to do. If anything, Billy, they might actually not do a thing, you see. I mean, and I'm hoping that's the case, that they just allow everybody to gather. I mean, if there's going to be no access to the Mansion House, fine in many regards, because I think it's wonderful when you do it outside and everybody can see.
But I think, you know, the way it's worked out in our favour.
Yeah.
And the only thing, if Christy Burke has his licence, he can bring it out to Joseph. We won't ask him to read the proclamation.
Well, yeah, I think Christy is nervous of whether you're going to knock on the door or not.
I'll be knocking on his door. But you see, the trouble is, we're told that we won't be allowed Dawson Street. We're not allowed Dawson Street to do something else.
Absolutely.
I mean, I could actually do it here without going in it, because the point is...
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the things I keep saying to people, that, look, once it's done, it's done. I mean, people, you can, you know, the wording is there, and people can accept and acknowledge that at the time you're doing it, and they can say, right, fine, I'm accepting that.
Yeah.
It's happening, it's done.
But anyway... I don't know how she's going to square that with coming up 2016 and our tricolour flag. We're not going to allow anyone to desecrate our tricolour flag. And I don't know how Enda Kenny is going to face Europe and sit there brazenly. And
it begs the question, whatever about this year, Billy, what are they going to do next year?
That's the point. Because whatever they do...
You see, I don't think they want to bring any attention to you or what you're doing or anybody else in relation to sovereignty at all. So I'm, in my mind, nobody's going to be there other than whoever wants to show up. That's the way I see it. But next year, I don't know what's in their head for next year.
Well, I don't know.
But in saying that, to me, you know, the most significant year is the 100-year anniversary, which is 2019. I mean, to me, and I've said that to you for a long time, that to me is a more significant date in many regards.
You think that Food Commission should be, if nothing else happens, it should be brought out about what happened in 1912 when the Ulster Volunteer Covenant was signed, and then they desecrated that in 1913 by taking to war. And as a consequence, the Irish Republican Brotherhood founded the Irish Volunteers and Citizens Army as a defence force.
Yeah, I think that's often overlooked, that it wasn't that the Irish suddenly decided to arm themselves to overthrow the crown, which is really what's kind of
started. That's the propaganda. That's the message that the provisional government are putting out.
Yeah, and it was a reaction to an action that was essentially funded by Guinness's, essentially.
And Guinness's and Rudyard Kipling.
Rudyard Kipling, who was a very... I mean, somebody asked, where did Rudyard Kipling get the money? Well, if you look up Rudyard Kipling, folks, you'll see he actually made quite a pretty penny in his day.
But 50,000, I mean, that was a lot of money in 1910.
Absolutely. And it also begs the question, well, they seemingly went... were prepared to commit to a war against the crown.
Against the
crown. And yet none of them were charged with high treason or even treason, for that matter.
Shouldn't there be?
And yet, look how well all those individuals and corporations have done since.
Done since then. And so, who suffered for the whole lot? All that, our people.
Yeah.
Everything was put down as like the taxes down us. We're treated, third class citizens, we don't count. We're in the hewers of wood and the drawers of water for the crown of England. That has to change. We're not, and we're not going to be either. And they're going to have to change.
And can we just, I mean, I know we've only a few minutes to go, Billy, but just, I mean, what I've been saying here is that the people on different lands, they too should also perhaps consider something, doing something similar. If they can, let's say they're abroad, or the Irish abroad, if you will.
70 million.
Shouldn't they too consider doing something on the 24th of January?
Of course.
At noon.
Of course. And they're the ones who...
Even if it's just, even if it's just stand silently and, in your own mind, just accept and acknowledge it.
Ah.
I mean, I think that's...
Vincent, it's been great to talk to you, and I must thank you very much for allowing me to go on, even though it was hard to...
Always a pleasure.
...cold and cough. But, it's very important that we recognise the 21st of January.
And recognise what it is and what it means to people and what it can mean for future generations. That's, to me, that's the biggest thing, Billy. When people really, really realise what this can mean.
Yeah, that's
true. It's astounding. It really is. And just from me to you, again, I can't thank you enough, Billy. I really can't.
And thanks, Winston, for all your help in keeping that alive. Listen, I'll say good night and good night to your listeners, and thank you very much. And hope to see everybody on the 21st, or as you say, do some little something there to honour the Irish Volunteers and Citizens Army who gave their lives. And, it wasn't even necessary, because if it had been worked out properly from the start, which nobody knows, all that violence in Northern Ireland, as I say, the Irish Republican Brothers abhor war, they abhor violence, they abhor corrupt maladministration. Propaganda, lies, and deception, and we have to get to that. We just want to live our life. We don't want to go to war with anybody. And just
only a madman would want war, Billy.
What?
Only a madman would want war.
That's all, and we don't want that. Nor do we have anything to do with that. We want our territory back, and we want to have a proper sovereign government, and it's working. Wouldn't it be great to say, oh, that's wonderful, to walk into that office and to see the way people are, governing the state, and to see it would be one instead of get yourself awful, awful attitude of couldn't care less, and our allegiance isn't people, and it could be wonderful, and I think it should be. Listen, Vincent, thank you very much, and I'll say good night.
No problem. Good night, Billy. Thanks
very
much. God bless.
Thanks very much.
Well, that was Billy McGuire, folks. You heard it. What you do with it, that's up to you. I'll say good night. Igual. We'll just call us off.